The following is a presentation of Real Racin' USA.
This is Joe Irwin.
And this is Wayne Jefferson.
From Jefferson Irwin Racin'.
And you're listening to Real Racin' USA.
Well, it's Tuesday night. It must be time for Real Racin' USA Live.
It's either that or it's time to bang your head.
Bang your head.
This stuff will make you want to bang your head against the wall, won't it?
There's some of it that will. There's no doubt about that. Well, we thawed out from the weekend.
What's different about today?
What's different about today?
Yeah, what is different about this Tuesday night show that you haven't noticed recently? Okay. I'll break the suspense. It's okay. Still daylight outside.
Oh, wow.
It's still daylight.
It's not raining.
Outside the studio, and it's not raining.
Yeah.
Real Racin' USA.
And it's Tuesday night, and it's still light outside.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Call in line for our second hour. Second hour. Don't bother calling in the first because we won't answer the phone. But
nope.
The second hour, it's 941-228. 8359. If you have comments, questions of any of our guests or us or anything else about the motors.
Oh, you can post them on the message board. There's a place there that you can post them.
Carol Wicks, get better.
Please get better. Please get better. Jack needs you.
Well, Rick, you know in Florida, little piece of news came out today. The TBARA Florida Sprint Car Series announced a major purse enhancement for the rest of this year.
Really?
Yes. They will see the competitors will see a 19% increase in purse payouts at the regular scheduled events. First place has been increased from $1,100 to $1,500. The majority of the increase, however, has been distributed to positions 10 through 24.
That, you know, and see, that's been something, you know, one of the few complaints you ever hear about the TBRA. I mean, we never really heard a lot, but those guys are pretty close, you know, about how they do things. But was that the purse wasn't enough for the lower part, the 10th on back?
TBRA President Larry Puglia, who I believe.
Lenny.
I can't read.
Mm-hmm.
Is. Going to be on our show next week.
Right. I just talked to Lenny the other day, and he and Dave Steele will be on the show. They've got some answers. This very show.
Next week.
Next Tuesday night. They've got some answers to some questions out there, and they got a few things they'd like to say.
Maybe they have some questions that...
Lenny told me it's going to be the Lenny and Dave show.
So okay. Well,
we'll see how
what Lenny had to say today was, we've got great car counts at our shows, but it's getting tougher and tougher on these guys. It was imperative to get the increase in place to help offset their costs so we can keep filling out the field and put on an awesome show for the fans, which the TBRA, of course, and anybody who has ever seen them in Florida during speed weeks or throughout the season, 20-some events, their shows are awesome.
Awesome shows, and the last show at DeSoto was Dave Steele winning by a wing, the front wing. It was an awesome show. 23 cars they had, and it's always the TBRA.
Yep. Any state in the country would be glad to have a series like the TBRA because the fans travel around to see it within the state all year long.
Yep. And another new exciting series that's coming along we witnessed this past weekend was the United Dirt Late Model Challenge Series of 42 cars.
We had 42 cars. What's
only
with that?
Only 42 cars.
What's with that?
Well, last week at Ocala.
When are they going to get some car count going?
Yeah, well, last week at Ocala, you know, we asked Ken Kenny, well, what are you expecting for Hendry County? He goes, I'll be happy with low 20s. 42 cars showed up. And,
this guy, this promoter here, Ken Kenny,
yeah.
He's for real.
He is for real.
Absolutely.
He's for real. And, of course, you're going to always have your detractors. Anytime somebody's doing good, they got to attack it. So, Ken Kenny, great race, and East Bay Raceway Park, the next race for the United Dirt Late Model Challenge Series. So, you want to stick around for that one.
You know, on tonight's show, we have, you didn't know we were going to have Billy Moyer Jr., did you?
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
Not until I got in studio, but that's cool.
Yeah, Billy Moyer Jr. That was a kind of a late addition. Who's going to be racing? Billy Moyer Jr. from Batesville, Arkansas, is going to be racing in the AMP Dirt Late Model Series out there in Arkansas and places out that way. Dennis Gibson, Hot Licks Racing.
Uh huh.
220 miles or so an hour in a quarter mile.
On a boat.
In a boat with a 3.5-inch diameter fuel line. Get out of here.
Insanity.
He's going to be on the show later on. Stevie LeTemp. We're going to talk to Stevie, our friend Stevie from
Straight Line. Gator Nationals this weekend.
Straight Line with Stevie. Well, we're going to be talking to Stevie about this. He's really wanted to do this because he went outside his his purview, I suppose.
Uh-huh.
And we're hooking him. He's hooking us up with Diana Dickinson, who has done some road course motorcycle racing.
Right. Well, you know, it's the fourth week, actually, of the NASCAR Fantasy Black Flag Real Racing USA Fantasy League. The big dog, number one top dog, took the lead this week. Fat Man Racing, who was has been first all season long, drops to second. Awesome Al up to third. Gregster, 35, moves up to fourth. The Ice Water, he was running third, drops down to fifth. I dropped down to sixth. Ain't Scared Racing, Bonehead Racing, Todd's Aluminum, and the Daytona Beach NASCAR guys are the top tens. You can read all the results are on the Real Racing USA message board. I dropped from, I'm not second anymore in my own points league.
Oh, this is your fantasy league?
Fantasy league, yeah.
Yeah. In the second hour, we're talking to, it's Motor Wars.
Motor Wars.
Actually, this was not really Motor Wars, but Wayne Anderson last week brought up some questions. Of course, you and I really didn't have, I mean, what he was telling us, we're just taking at face value. It's
right.
His,
because, mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not, obviously, I know nothing about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know a little.
Yeah.
We are going to have somebody on tonight when we talk to Dwayne McGonigal and Jeff Choquette.
Yeah.
Jeff wanted to have some.
Jeff called and wanted to be on the show.
That's right. So. Jeff called and he wanted to counter some of the points that Wayne Anderson made last week in good faith and everything, good sportsmanship. But so we brought in Rob Bonehead Elting, who does know a little bit about this more than we do.
Yeah, he's been he owns a late model, so he probably knows a little bit more about that than we do.
Now,
yes,
the Hooters Pro Cup.
Hooters Pro Cup.
I don't know about this. We might have to call in our buddy Skip Wall about this because it appears that Chanticleer Holdings made an announcement today that they are buying Hooters. I don't know if you had a chance to read any of that, Rick.
Yeah, I read a little bit of it.
Yeah, it looks like Chanticleer Holdings is buying Hooters with the sale to occur before July 31st of this year.
What is Chanticleer?
It's a holding company. And
people with a bunch of money?
Yeah. And
is that what a holding company is? People
with
a bunch
apparently,
of money?
Apparently, from what we've got, there's some things that have to happen inside of Hooters before this to all happen. But basically, I mean, it's a pretty complicated situation. Anytime you're talking about a multi-zillion dollar company, of course, there's a lot of complications.
$55.1 million.
Well, the thing is, what effect, see, this is, excuse me, this is the thing that's a little unclear about us is how this is going to affect things like Hooters Golf and Hooters Pro Cup racing and so forth, which are minor little, to some people, nuisances in a business of this nature, especially the racing.
Yeah.
And,
well, it appears that the Chanticleer company.
And Hooters.
It's still going to be Hooters. They own part of Hooters.
Well, yeah. But the whole ownership operation deal is apparently going to change. But you know what's fascinating here is that we said last, there's some things that the Hooters Pro Cup Series has done over the last several years that a lot of people, and all we've done is report on it and,
right.
and give every once in a while give our two cents about it. But mm-hmm. basically, a lot of people have been saying all this is that some of the moves that they've been making have not been clear that they are beneficial to the long-term health of that
not
series.
Not in the best interest of a series that's going to continue running.
Absolutely. No. And no, not at all. And like this year now, and we can clarify the exact numbers, but I'm telling you, they're getting ready to open at Lakeland USA International Speedway this week, and they have one of the lowest pre-entry deals, and the driver roster for the whole North and South is half, I believe, of what it has been. They may not be able to fill a full field at Lakeland.
That would be bad. That would not be a good thing. Always has been 30 to 45 cars at Lakeland. Man, that would be sad because, like Jack said, you know, the Hooters Pro Cup has done things, you know, cut their schedule, spread the racing out over, you know, a lot of traveling for these guys that is just another added expense and not a good thing, man.
Do we have Skip? Skip, are you hooked up? Did the engineers get you hooked up?
Yes, I am.
All right. Skip Wall from North Carolina. He is our representative, represents Real Racing USA, Karnak.com, and, of course, his own site, Southern Motor Racing, up that way, and has been covering the Hooters Pro Cup for a long, long time. Actually was a spotter for many teams. And has done countless interviews with many, many drivers, team owners, and officials of the Hooters Pro Cup. Skip, what do you make of this new deal? I mean, is there what is going on? How is this going to affect the Pro Cup? Do you have any idea?
Well, it's going to affect it in a couple of different ways, Jack. And if I were Gene Cox or Tony Cox, I believe I'd be squirming in my seat right now. And, you know, Jack, you and I have been friends, what, about 10 years now?
Yeah, something like that.
Well, I've always been straight up with you, Jack, and we've had a lot of conversation, but this is a deal that I'm not on top of yet. And
well, what does that mean? Does that mean you're not on top or you just don't want to tell me something?
Well, I know where it's headed and know what's going on. I just need to verify some facts, and I need to do some more research, and I can tell some more about it.
Rick, is he holding out on us?
Sounds like
sounds
it.
Sounds to me sounds, like.
Sounds like he's,
We called you up, yeah. Skip, because we thought you were going to give us the straight scoop here. Now you're telling us you can't quite do that yet?
Well, I just got some more research to do. And,
okay.
And
all right.
I have more to say as it all comes and unfolds. But
well, let me ask you this. Do you think that... Now, let me ask you this. Has the car count, the entry lists been way down for this year?
What you talking about? That we just found out. Now we know why Hooters Pro Cup waited till the last moment to let all this stuff come out of the bag. They have 29 entries in the Northern Division and 39 entries in the Southern Division, and then they held out till this week, and then we found out that there's 29 or 30 entries. I believe it's 30 entries for this weekend's race at Lakeland. I don't think there'll be that many.
Holy cow.
That they'll take 32 cars, and there's not even enough to fill the field already.
But couldn't they pick up some more entries between now and Saturday? I mean, it's only Tuesday.
Well, you could, Jack. The problem there is I think that the Hooters is starting. They kind of forgot about the little teams and the independent teams, and it's kind of like the some of these rules that they made about such as the fiberglass bodies. It's kind of like coming back to haunt them now.
Oh, because that got rid of all them steel bodies, and they went. And now there's a whole new series that you covered this past weekend with those.
Absolutely right. All these cars, all these steel body cars, had nowhere to go, and the folks over there at Super Cup Stock Car Series picked them up, and they had a ball this weekend, and a lot of drivers seem to have a lot of fun. And how about that Megan Rittenour? Wins the race, 16 years old, wins the race, and is a lot sooner than I thought it would be. But, you know, I haven't heard no complaints of any drivers at that race. And I've got a story I'm fixing to do.
That was a Tri-County?
There could be up to 50 cars in this race before it's over and done with.
Which race?
For the Super Cup Series.
And these are the steel-bodied cars.
Excuse me?
These are the steel-bodied cars.
That's correct. They're saying that the way the series is going now, that they could have upwards 50 drivers. And if that's so, Mr. Joe Schmalen, the competition director, is willing to make accommodate them all. He's not going to turn nobody around in this series. Whoever comes gets the race. And if they have to run two races, they'll do it.
Wow. So those guys are starting to look like they knew what was coming.
Well, they seem to have it going on, Jack. They seem to have a focus. They know things are going to be slow. It's the same way they had the same type of car counts when Hooters Pro Cup started back in what was 97. And it grew from there, and they've got a lot of work to do. But they're meeting their goals and exceeding their goals from where they thought they would be at already.
Yeah.
I was impressed. I was impressed. It was awful cold up there, but I was awful impressed.
Well, that's cool. So when are you going to have a story out on this Hooters thing, and what do you think? How is this going to shake out? What can you tell us?
Jack, I feel like I'll have something by the first of the week.
Okay. That's fair.
What I can say is Hooters is being sold, and the company it's being sold to has got to change ways. They're going to have to go public. And if that takes into effect as to what they're saying, then all the debt goes with it, and X amount of dollars is being spent here and there, and it could now we got to find out who actually owns USAR. And I invite the Coxes to be on the radio show to explain maybe what the future of their series will be. And I'm not so sure they even know, but a lot of research has got to be done to see what's going to happen. And,
all right.
And hopefully if it does happen, if that series isn't owned by Hooters, then maybe they can come up with another title sponsor and keep this thing going should Hooters go by the wayside sponsorship.
Yeah, you know, and it would be good if this somehow this could be resurrected and put somebody lights a fire under that series, because it has been a mainstay in the short track racing deal. And, you know, we called it the most exciting short track series in America for a long, long time. Not so sure that's true anymore, but we really believed that when we sort of started calling it that a long time ago.
You know, I'm hearing much more about the ASA late models as being the premier short track. And, you know, that's a really growing series.
And that's where you're going to be. You're going to go back to Tri-County this week to cover the ASA late model series, correct?
Yeah, I'm going to learn more about them and to see if I can put some input into it.
Cool.
See what this thing is, and I'll have something to report on that as well.
All right, so we'll check back with you next week.
Okay.
You got anything, Rick?
Yeah. No.
Okay.
No.
All right, Skip, thanks a lot. And, you know, I won't say thanks for nothing because you gave us something, but I'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you soon.
Took the carrot out in front of us, didn't he?
I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Skip ain't never done me that way before. He must be on to something.
No, that's something I was thinking about, though. I mean, you know, we've always called it the Hooters Pro Cup.
Yeah.
But Hooters has always been the title sponsor. Just like it's this now the Sprint Cup.
Sure.
It's
nationwide series, whatever.
The series is NASCAR.
Yeah.
You know, it's NASCAR, and like the Hooters Pro Cup, the actual racing series is USAR.
USAR. Yeah.
Which that name was never really made.
They never drove that name
Never
home.
Drove that name out there.
They
I mean, you always saw it on the programs or the tickets or whatever, but never really, I mean, even in the like post-race interviews and stuff, it was always the winner of the Hooters Pro Cup 250 at Lakeland, whatever it was. It was really never the USAR deal. So that's something I always thought about. The other thing is, what really amazes me is where Hooters Pro Cup went to and where they are now, because they had gotten to the point where Junior Motorsports, Labonte, all of them had cars in this series, and they were using this as their developmental series because, to be honest, the Busch Series, it was just the Junior NASCAR. You know, if you were a new driver, you were not going to go anywhere because it's a field of NASCAR drivers getting ready for Sunday. And the Hooters Pro Cup had really come along, but then when it seemed like it really changed is when Kenny Wallace made that statement about Hooters not getting too big for themselves, not expanding beyond where they need to be. And it seems like they've tried to do that, and then it's just gone by the wayside. Okay, Jack?
I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back and shift gears totally. I think, remember we met Dennis Gibson from Hot Licks Racing up at
PRI? Yeah.
And we're going to shift gears here and get away from stock car racing for a few minutes and talk about what it's like to take a boat 220 miles an hour in a quarter mile. How's that?
Sounds like a winner.
Sounds like scary.
Yeah, we'll be right back.
Real men of genius.
Real men of genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Bathroom Stall Dirty Joke Writer.
Mr. Bathroom Stall Dirty Joke Writer.
Armed with your trusty marker, you do the impossible. Make an incredibly dirty place even dirtier.
Scribble it down now.
Your jokes make us pee our pants. Lucky for us, they're down around our ankles.
Yeah!
You answer our most vexing question. Whatever happened to the man from Nantucket?
Oh, that's a good one.
So crack open a nice cold Bud Light, oh ruler of the rhyme. Because when we're looking for a good time, we call you.
Oh, Mr. Bathroom Stall Duty Joke Rider.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Are you ready to win? If so, it's time to move up to 5-Star Race Car Bodies. 5-Star Race Car Bodies designs and manufactures the highest quality race car body components. Short tracks, drag strips, road courses, and even in the desert, 5-Star has one driving passion: to help you win. 5-Star Race Bodies designs and manufactures for NASCAR, Grand Am, NHRA, IHRA, SCCA, short track asphalt, short track dirt, USAC, USAR, Hooters Pro Cup, and the ASA Late Model Series. Find out more today, 5starbodies.com.
PowerMaster is your ASA Series sponsor for the XS Power Batteries. PowerMaster is pleased to announce the introduction of the XS Power Series of batteries. XX Power Batteries for racing applications and batteries for your car audio application. 12-volt batteries for street machines, street rods, off-road vehicles, and even motorcycles. XS Power Batteries means 30% more power and no battery spilling. PowerMaster also carries your starters and alternators. Visit us on the web at www.powermastermotorsports.com.
Hi, this is Tate Pierce, the driver of the number 81 Chevy Monte Carlo Timbrink Underground Special, and we're live on Real Racing USA.
O'Reilly Auto Parts ASA Fast Lane, only on Real Racing USA. Meet the racers of America's most exciting short track racing series every Wednesday night from 8 p.m. until 9 p.m. From the Milwaukee Mile to Bristol Motor Speedway, Five Flags in Nashville, the ASA is the racing series where young talent meets wily veterans in extreme short track competition. O'Reilly is America's auto parts store, and the ASA is America's premier late model series. O'Reilly Auto Parts ASA Fast Lane gets you close to the action and behind the scenes with the real stories from the drivers themselves. The O'Reilly ASA Fast Lane, only on Real Racing USA.
And And we are back here on Tuesday night, Real Racing USA Live. Rick, tell you what, that was pretty impressive when we saw that boat up close.
Oh, it was, you know, we saw a lot of things there at the PRI show, but we saw that boat, and we just stopped and we said, wow, we got to get these guys on. And we have, and we got Mr. Dennis Hoot Gibson. Dennis, how you doing tonight?
Awesome. Really glad to have you guys. Give me a call. This is pretty cool up here in Texas. We was really looking forward to hearing from you guys, and we had a great visit, and it was an awesome show down at PRI in Orlando.
Now, so, Dennis, tell us a little bit about your history, about how you got to the point where you are with the Nitro boat.
I started back in 78 with a pretty much a lake boat, you know, and then the SDBA, Southern Drag Boat Association, which was an association in Texas, had, you know, an event up in Waco, Texas, and so you go up there and you put your boat up, and, you know, they show you some of the safety stuff that you have to have for your 10, 11-second boat. And as soon as you went there and you got the fever of drag racing against somebody else on water, I mean, you had to step it up and get into the next gear and go up a little faster. So I went from blown gas to blown alcohol to fuel jet in 90, and then I was out for a few years because the coalition of what's going faster on water meant the boys out there in the open were not doing so good if there was an issue. So by the instrument of putting the capsule in the boat and then working around making that all work with the outside fiberglass, you know, and then we got into carbon fiber, and we're doing full roll cages in the capsules now, and the oxygen for the drivers and all the stuff, and then the twin screws that come along, you know, going from a single screw to the twin W drives, and then hooking up the fuel motors that the boys are using on the asphalt to the W drives and running them out the bottom with twin props. I mean, we've gone from, when I quit, I was driving a 250-mile-an-hour boat. Now 150-mile-an-hour boat on jet on water, and now we're running 250 and a quarter mile on fuel. So it's made quite a jump in the last 30 years now.
So when you go, so Dennis, when you go from 150 miles an hour to 250, you go from a cockpit to a capsule.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, anybody now that's going over 8 seconds on the water is in a capsule boat. I mean, it's an 8 second quarter mile. Now we're the Pro Mods, which are running about a 1500 horsepower alcohol motor, and they're running in a bracket class where they can, you know, a 699 with a 9 is too fast, but a 700 with a 1 is just right on the money. So, I mean, they're running in the Pro Mod class. Then we have, of course, the Top Alcohol Hydros, which is running a 3,500 horsepower motor to 4,000 on a single prop in a hydro that's a little bit lighter and shorter than ours. And then the fuelers go up there with the 21-foot boats to 24-foot boats with the twin props in 7,000 horsepower. So
now this, the motor in your boat is actually comparable to a fuel funny car, right?
I'm running a Brad Anderson aluminum block with a the Brad heads, and it's everything's the same. You know, we're running Kobelco blowers and the dual 44 generators and 16 spark plugs and 88 to 100 gallon fuel pumps. So, yeah, my boat gets about 42 gallons to the mile if I figure it out right.
Well, not John Force and those guys. They can take their cars, they can put them in the wind tunnel, you know, and see how the wind is going to affect them and going straight down on the asphalt. But you guys have to compensate for a wave or a bump in the water. How do you do that?
Well, you know, if you've ever been to a boat race, we don't have anybody out there standing on the asphalt after we've done a burnout and then readjust the barrel valve and get everything just tweaked just perfect for the launch and the wind and the heat and the conditions and stuff like that. We have to do that on the trailer before we launch the boat. The guys are pulled out there with jet skis, put on what they call a holding rope, where the rope is strung across the from bank to bank, and they're sitting there looking down the quarter mile, and the actual starter yells at them, or we do it through a headphone system now, where that they tell them to get ready, all right, thumbs up, Here, watch the lights. The light starts flashing. That means they start the motor. They start the motor with their left foot, pull the mag on in the center of the steering wheel. It's sitting there running, and then they have a countdown clock, and the countdown clock is to allow, like a tree, only it's allowed them to release their holding position on the holding rope, slam the lid on the capsule, and watch the clock and get ready to mash on it when the thing goes green so they can cut as good a light, because the reaction time is done just like from the time the light goes green till they cross the beam is the same as on a car or anything else. So we got drivers with reaction times and the O's, and they leave, and, you know, the water conditions change every millisecond on water. I mean, if you have a side wind, a gust of wind, a current from behind on a river or creek, we do counter steering for sitting there, so the boat is actually, if you have a back current coming in from the back, you counter steer the rudder, and then you have to remember straighten that up right before you leave, or it's going to throw you over in the other lane. There's lots of things that goes on out there for this driver to do other than just, we don't do no burnouts. You know, if we do, we're all the way down the track. We don't have no water pit because we're all on water.
Yeah, I thought sprint car drivers had it rough.
Man.
Yeah. Now, they're very busy out there for that 30, 40 seconds when they're waiting on, you know, these guys are so well, my driver, Jarrett Selby out of Kansas City, Missouri, has had 600 passes in a capsule boat. So that made him very qualifiable for me to put him in fuel. Even though he went from a 7-second boat to a 480 boat, I mean, that is a huge, huge difference. He said he felt like he was setting a stop sign in his wife's car and got hit in the back end with a Mack truck at 60 miles an hour when it took off. So 0 to 208 miles an hour in 2.8 seconds.
Now, what actually propels this boat through that quarter mile?
What's that, sir?
What actually moves this boat? Is it jet? Is it prop? How does it work?
There's two counter-rotating props, okay? We have one that turns right and one turns left. Some of the guys turn them in, some of them turn them out. The theory hasn't been worked out what's the best yet, I don't believe. Some of them set them on 18-inch centers. Some of them, ours is set up on 14-inch centers. My theory there is let the props stay closer together in the center. If you lose one or a gear goes out on one, it has less leverage to push the boat to the right or left at 200 miles an hour, 250 or 240 or wherever it lets go or wherever it breaks, because it's like losing a tire on a car. Immediately you lose all that traction to that side, so the other one takes over and does all the stuff, and before you mentally can get off the throttle, you're in a bad situation. So, I mean, that's...
He lost me 10 minutes ago, Rick. I'm telling you.
I'm getting a little visual picture of it. It's just unbelievable. I mean... Now, are these props, are they belt-driven?
No, sir. No, we run it what they call, my motor is, of course, setting in the boat backwards, all right? Because we run the motor through a W drive,
right.
That means that it has a top idler gear, but the center gear is hooked directly to the shaft that comes out of the clutch. We're running four clutches. It's on an air dump system. So, in other words, we're setting our idling, and as soon as the light goes green, he mashes on the throttle and trips the clutch, and it all dumps at the same time. The motor's sitting in idling at about 2,800 RPMs. We dump it into gear. At 3,000, it automatically locks up. The motor goes up to about, on my particular computer scale, it goes up about 6,800, 7,000 RPMs. Then the props are burning in the water. We try and get a burn so it doesn't surface the props too soon, because if it surfaces too soon, it will stick the nose of the boat under the water, and you go down and see fish for a while, and then you pop back up. But anyway, you burn the props. Once they start to hook, when they hook, they pull the motor down to about 4,805 grand. Well, that's like going into the pits with Schumacher's car, doing a burnout. Then all of a sudden your tires start to catch traction, and then you go run it on out the other end. Well, that tune-up is 100% different in water than it is on asphalt. Okay? You can imagine trying to tune a boat to you know, do a burnout, and then back up, and then you reset the tune-up. Well, you don't have no backup here. I mean, you got to go all the way. You pull her down, then it loads the motor up so hard that it's trying to lift the heads and all the bolts and stretch all that stuff out of whack. And then when it starts hooking, then the props start catching. And when the props start catching, the boat frees itself up. It's gone, and it surfaces the props within about 100 feet.
Wow.
So maybe even sooner than that.
And
but, I mean, like I said, our 660 feet, we're running in 2.8 seconds. and some of the guys are in 2.7s, you know. So the eighth mile is really, really quick. Then you have to make it take it on out the other end, so you're starting to pull a little fuel off of it because it doesn't need all that fuel, and a little bit of timing out of it because it doesn't need all that timing to take it on out the other end. You want it to make it live because it's got to go 13-20. So about 50 pounds of manifold pressure, you know, you're running a 58 to 65 degrees timing at the starting line and 52 or 3 at forward to the finish line, and running 92% octane is what the IHBA allows. And, you know, there's some good places out there. Dragboatracing.com, you can go on there and read up on all the boys. They've got some videos on there. There's some of the guys who have been playing a long time, Tedesco with Loose Cannon, Eddie Knox with the Problem Child. I mean, there's some hitters out there. Speed Sports Special out of St. Louis, Missouri is a real strong player. They won the championship last year. We were number two. I mean, Amos Satterley, famous Amos, been around for a long, long time, and he's good. He knows his boats. He knows his sand dragsters. You know, there's some good stuff out there.
Dennis, do you line these boats up? I mean, are these lined up side by side just like you do on in a regular drag strip?
Well, sure.
Okay.
Why not? You know, it's water. It's drag racing.
You better not turn left.
I mean, if you
or right
turn left, the other guy better be gone.
Yeah, no doubt.
So, I mean, there's, you know, I mean, then it's, yeah, I mean, it happens.
Is it whoever gets to the finish line first, or is it whoever is faster? No,
absolutely, and fuel, and all the pro classes except for the pro mods are to the finish line first. Yes, sir.
All right, because some of them are timed, right?
Yes, sir. The pro mods are in a 7-second class.
Okay. Now, what's one of these toys actually cost a person?
Well, these toys?
Yeah, that's a toy for big boys.
The big boy toys, yeah. You don't just take this to the normal lake to do a little trial run, you know, here and there, because, I mean, for one, you'll draw one heck of a crowd. Two, you need a rescue boat out there because if something goes wrong, you need them to go get your capsule and your boy that's out there sinking to the bottom somewhere, you know. But, no, we do all our testing and running at the track. The rescue boys are there with two rescue boats, one on each end of the track. They're all, got, you know, set up with fire suits and dive suits and everything else. So, I mean, it's just, all you have to do is take asphalt and then just throw a bunch of water on it. And, you know, that's what we have, liquid quarter miles.
Wow.
It's virtually the same stuff. Very same motors, just we're doing a 3,000 to 3,500-pound boat, 92 octane, and the same motors. I mean, you know, 100 tall engines with the 100 tall heads now is what we're running, you know, stage fives, sixes. I mean, we've got guys that have been doing it a long time. Spirit of Texas out of Dallas. Those guys have been gone back to when Freddie Bray and you know, it's just Eddie Hill, you know, the old Texan back there that ran the fuel car. He ran a boat before he ever, you know, broke the 5-second deal up there in Ennis. So it's all, you know, it's all good. If you get to drag racing in your system, it's worse than cocaine. There's no place to go get rehabilitated, you know.
Yeah. So now, like, what when you were at the PRI show, you brought the boat there, and we didn't get to talk to your driver because he was busy. We spoke with you for a little bit. Was that a place where you actually were able to make business sponsorship arrangements, or what would you accomplish there?
At the PRI show, we were doing, you know, we were in the booth with the IHBA, International Hot Boat Association. Mr. Fagan asked us to bring the boat down and put it on display because, as you all were trapped or brought into the, you know, the pits or to the, you know, where we had the display, mm-hmm. It was, you know, people don't realize how far this sport has come. You know, here you are sitting with a 7,000 horsepower fuel motor sitting in the back of a boat. Well, how crazy is that? And then they looked at the capsule and said, well, there's a lot of thought gone into this and everything. And so, yes, we were looking for sponsors. Love to have extra sponsors. These boats, we're just now getting, you know, we're getting more and more TV time on Speed. We've done some, you know, due diligence for other sponsors out there. Federal Mogul helps me. K&M helps me a little bit, only on, you know, in parts and stuff, but the dollars that it's going to take to get around this year with the $4 diesel and all the stuff that's coming up, you know, and flying all your crew members and everything else, Yeah, it's not a – it's a big kid sport.
Yeah, right around the corner from you there at the where you guys were located, we ran into a guy named Terry Rinker who races in the F1 Championship Series deal. And I guess that's a little bit different. They're
like a road course.
Like a road course on water. But it was amazing because we had this, like, for us, for Rick and I, we had wanted to have some people on our show last year who were involved in boat racing, and we just weren't able ever to get it done. And so we were really excited to run into you guys and be able to hook up with you. But we had talked to Terry. I come back home the next day. I wake up, flip on the TV, and on speed, there's Terry Rinker racing. It was like they had a big race on TV, you know, and I realized this is a bigger deal.
Yeah, yeah. Now the I think he's with the American Powerboat Association in the offshore.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, offshore. Uh-huh. And then there's the Unlimited Hydros, which run in a big circle out there that have the jet engines in them, you know. So when we did that deal, the Need for Speed on the History Channel, the National Geographic Channel, that's what it was, we, you know, they came to us and wanted to know kind of what you're all asking, the evolution of how we've been going from, you know, 150, 180, 200, now 250, and we're probably going to see somebody hit 265, 270 this year in a quarter mile on water. So, I mean, it's getting hooked up. It's getting good.
Well, we had Scotty Cannon on one of our shows, Straight Lining with Stevie. We do on Wednesday night, drag racing show here on Real Racing USA. And we asked him, I believe that's who we were talking with, about what is the limit? You know, like, how fast can you go? Where is the point where you can't, like, make it go any faster? And if I'm not mistaken, it was like, we're pretty close to that right now. That's
Well, everybody said that about the fuel cars, too, didn't they?
Yeah.
Right.
Back there when they were, oh, man, they'll never go faster than 280 miles an hour. I mean, that would be totally unheard of.
Yeah, know? But what they were saying was they'd fly apart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, so... Like you said earlier, we don't have any wind tunnels or any of that stuff to check out. But my boat actually was built by Bullet Fiberglass out in Fresno, California, and they have the technology to let the air out from underneath the boat by having bolt-on sponsons. Okay? Our sponsons on the side of the boat unbolt so we can put this thing in the trailer because it's 108 inches wide. So we take it apart, and... It has the stability there of letting the air out between and underneath the boat, but you got your wide footprint of a wider boat on the nose where you get your stability like a pickle fork, if you will, that's wide on the front and narrow in the back to, you know, let the props do the digging and pushing, but not put a lot of drag on the boat. So, I mean, it runs on three points, the props in the back and then the two outside sponsons. And when it's really rocking, I mean, they're maybe an inch in the water. So, I mean, it's cool.
Let me ask you, do you ever have a race called off because the water's too rough?
We've only had one ever rained out. Get that? Okay. I mean, it's too much rain.
Yeah.
Too much trash down the river. But I've got to say we have had in certain situations there was a – maybe too windy,
yeah.
Or it was blown out, you know. But, no, it hadn't happened in a few years. I mean, it's, you know, we've been pretty, you know, fortunate in locations that, you know, if it rains and then it quits raining, we just got a fresh track, man. It's ready to go.
Yeah.
Now, and when's your first competition this year?
It will start in April. It's in Firebird Raceway out there in Phoenix, Arizona, April the 25th, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, something like that.
Yeah, so maybe we'll talk.
To have you guys? You guys got to come experience this. I mean, if you get, you know, the vibration in your chest that you all get at a racetrack,
yeah,
on the asphalt,
right?
If you're that close. You're that close in Firebird, and you will feel the thunder and the rooster tail is just about a quarter of a mile long because the boat is so quick that the water's starting to fall at the start line when you're going out the finish line.
Oh wow!
Yeah, the fastest boats I've ever seen is at the. In Sarasota every year around the
offshore,
fourth,
yeah.
They have the offshore, Sarasota, Florida, they have the offshore powerboat deal, and them are some bad boys.
Well, just add another 100 mile an hour to that.
Gotcha. Okay.
Now, our shaft speed is about 23,000 RPM, so It does shoot. It tosses a lot of water.
Well, maybe we'll get in touch with Jared after the first race, and we'll talk to him.
Absolutely. Jared's he will fill you in what it's like to sit in the seat of that thing. I have never got to. I made sure I had plenty of weight on myself that I couldn't get in the car.
It's always good to have a good excuse like
yeah.
that.
Kept me out of a few race cars.
Yeah, there you go. But Jared, I don't think he'd give up the seat, you know?
Yeah.
He's a very, very focused when he's in the seat. I mean, he knows what he has to do. I put him in the water with a perfectly good boat. Sometimes he'll blow it up, sometimes he won't, but I can't really, I guess, blame that on him. I said, Jared, you're either on the throttle or you're off the throttle. There's no pedaling it, no lifting, no nothing. You wide open it, and that's the way I have it tuned, and that's the way I want it to go. And we ran 490s all weekend out in Phoenix at the World Finals. So,
right.
I mean, and then we turned the motor around. We got, nine guys in the pits there, and we have to pull the motor out of the boat, totally service it, take it all the way down the crank and the block, check all the bearings around the crank, and then throw it back together with a new set of rods, pistons, put the new set of heads, ready heads on it, and blower and all that stuff back in it, and be ready to light it in 90 minutes.
So, yes.
I mean, we're ready to, it's time to go again.
There you go.
HotLicksRacing.com, that's your website, right?
Yes, sir. HotLicksRacing.com. You guys can go on there.
Sure.
Dwayne Sims with Drag Boat Racing helped me put that together. You can go see our schedule on there with the International Hot Boat and the SDBA, Southern Drag Boat. Our appearances will be on there where we're going to run. And just love to have anybody come up, said they either seen us at the PRI show or they want to write us a check because they want to be on the side of the boat. Or
there you go.
Come and say they heard us on the show.
There you go.
All right, Dennis.
That all works for me.
Thanks a lot, man. I'll tell you what we'll do is I really appreciate you coming on with us, and we'll give you a shout back towards the end of April, and we'll hook up with Jared.
Oh yeah, please get a hold of Jared, and
cool.
he'll bring you up to speed. And we really enjoyed visiting with you guys.
Well, he's not gonna bring us up to speed, but we'll certainly talk to him.
Yeah, we'll follow him.
We just need to drag your tail out there and come see.
All right,
that's the way to do that.
All right, Dennis. Thanks, man.
Talk to y'all.
All right, thank you.
Oh,
all right, another venue conquered.
Real Racing USA.
And it's all about the racing.
Real Racing USA.
This is Joe Irwin.
And this is Wayne Jefferson.
From Jefferson Irwin Racing.
And you're listening to Real Racing USA.
Carnac.com, your online racing community since 1997. Carnac.com is racing classifieds, racing photos, racing news, lively racing, message boards, chat rooms, multimedia, and so much more. And if your race team or racing business needs a website, or your website needs a fire lit under it, look no further than Carnac.com. From affordable web hosting to fancy flash animation, Carnac gets it done.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Bathroom Stall Dirty Joke Writer.
Mr. Bathroom Stall Dirty Joke Writer.
Armed with your trusty marker, you do the impossible. Make an incredibly dirty place even dirtier.
Scribble it down now.
Your jokes make us pee our pants. Lucky for us, they're down around our ankles.
Yeah!
You answer our most vexing question. Whatever happened to the man from Nantucket?
Oh, that's a good one.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, oh ruler of the rhyme. Because when we're looking for a good time, we call you.
Oh, Mr. Bathroom Stall Dirty Joke Rider.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Are you ready to win? If so, it's time to move up to 5-Star Race Car Bodies. 5-Star Race Car Bodies designs and manufactures the highest quality race car body components. Short tracks, drag strips, road courses, and even in the desert, 5-Star has one driving passion, to help you win. 5-Star Race Bodies designs and manufactures for NASCAR, Grand Am, NHRA, IHRA, SCCA, Short Track Asphalt, Short Track Dirt, USAC, USAR, Hooters Pro Cup, and the ASA Late Model Series. Find out more today at 5starbodies.com.
PowerMaster is your ASA series sponsor for the XS Power batteries. PowerMaster is pleased to announce the introduction of the XS Power series of batteries, XX Power batteries for racing applications, and batteries for your car audio application. 12-volt batteries for street machines, street rods, off-road vehicles, and even motorcycles. XS Power batteries means 30% more power and no battery spilling. PowerMaster also carries your starters and alternators. Visit us on the web at www.powermastermotorsports.com.
Hello, I'm Frank Bartles, and this here's my partner, James Brown. As the weather starts getting too hot, we hope you will reach for one of these. New and James Brown Wine Cooler.
It tastes good.
They come in three funky flavors. Gravity Grape.
Get down.
Crime of Passion Fruit.
Woo! Kill myself.
And my personal favorite, Papaya.
Papaya's got a brand new bag.
It'll get you off faster than a big city lawyer.
Woo!
And a single pack serves 6 to 10. Just like James.
New Bartles and James Brown Wine Coolers. The cooler cooler, made in the cooler.
Now behind bars everywhere.
And thank you for your support.
Well, Rick, that was pretty wild, huh?
Yeah, that was definitely different there.
Hey, we have with us on the line the host of Wednesday night's Straight Lining with Stevie, Stevie LaTempe. Stevie, I don't know if you were just listening to the show, but we just got off the air here with Dennis Gibson at Hot Licks Racing. 250 miles an hour in a quarter mile on a boat.
Kind of makes you wonder, just what was that man thinking?
Well, he's not the driver. He's the owner. He said he had put enough weight on early in his life to make sure he wasn't going to be able to get into the boat.
See, he was thinking.
So, what do you have? I know you're bringing us a little special tonight. What you got hooked up?
Well, you know, normally you only see me go either 660 or 1,320 feet straight, but something special here. Last week, when I was headed down to Gainesville, I stopped down at Savannah and had the opportunity to meet Diana Dickerson, and she was going out for her very first time on a road course, an asphalt road course, with a 2003 Buell. This Buell generates about 90 horsepower, and I don't have to tell you, that's a lot of horsepower on a bike. She's the head instructor for teaching riders how to ride street bikes at both Lakeland Harley-Davidson and Ridge Harley-Davidson down in Florida, in fact, down there by you guys, not too far away. And kind of a unique young lady. She's a former factory worker, realtor. She's kind of done it all. And she is definitely not afraid of a bike. And one thing, just to tell you a lot about her, I guess, her personality. After she got through making her runs out there and laps around, you know, the course, getting to feel the track, she was so excited, she came up to me and she says, "You know, Stevie, I don't even smoke, but I think I need a cigarette." So this pretty well tells you all about her, and I'm going to let you talk to her now. We're going to put her on the air. Diana, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Stevie, and I'm glad to be here, and I'm so excited to be doing what I'm doing, and I can't believe that actually somebody's paying attention to me, so that's great.
Well, I'll tell you what, it was kind of hard not to pay attention to you. You did a great job of when I watched you out there going around the course, and I thought it was kind of neat that it was your very first time, and I wanted to capture the energy, the excitement of a rookie going out on a road course for the first time. What was that like?
Well, I would have to say that it was a combination of terror and fear, because I really didn't know what to expect, but I knew it was something that I absolutely had to do and just go ahead and try it, and I wasn't going to back down in front of all those guys. It was really, really cool. I mean, they made us wear orange shirts, so they knew who the rookies were. So they knew that they had to maybe be a little careful around passing us, or if we got to pass them, which we did on some occasions. But it was really exciting, and I can't give this up. And my parents think I'm a total nut, but that's okay.
Well, so you were out there with veterans.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I'm guessing there's probably about 40 bikes out there. They had different classes and different, basically, bikes with different horsepower, and they put us all out there at the same time. And in my specific race, I just competed against bikes that were similar to mine in engine displacement and horsepower. But we did have the fast guys out there, too.
So you were doing like 120 on the straights. How fast do you go when you got that bike leaned all the way over like that? How fast are you going?
I'm thinking that probably turn one, I'm probably doing about 100. I don't have a speedo on my bike, and it's probably just as well because I don't really need to know how fast I'm going. It's a case of you have a better feeling of how fast you're going, and my lap times will indicate how I'm doing as opposed to just miles per hour on certain sections of it. But I'm figuring about, judging by my RPMs, I'm figuring about 100.
Wow.
Well, you know, Jack, if you ever look at some of these riders, they actually wear these knee pads. And I don't know just what
material's
made of, but they go through these corners so hard that they scrape their knee pads to get through the turns. So, Diana, did you wear out any pads over the weekend?
As a matter of fact, that weekend I did go ahead and touch on the right side on that track, and which is the first time for me. I'm much more comfortable doing left-hand turns, so I've touched on the left side, but it was the first time that I actually could do it on the right. So I was pretty proud of myself.
Do they put what's in them? They have steel in them or something?
I believe they're like a Teflon, not Teflon, but some sort of fiberglass stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It's just a case to protect your knee, and it's also a way for you to have an idea that if you're touching your knee, you're probably getting pretty close to as far as you need to be leaning over.
You know, it's amazing. I watch that stuff on TV when it's on, and I mean, you see these guys even racing. People racing, they race in the rain when it's fully wet. I used to ride bikes, man. I couldn't even imagine doing that on a wet surface. I can't imagine how they do that.
Well, I know that you have to run special tires to be running in the rain, and I'll be honest with you, I haven't done it yet. And in fact, that's probably my next purchase is going to be a set of rain tires, because yes, it doesn't matter, the race goes on rain or shine, and you need to be prepared to go out and do your thing. So that'll be my next investment.
Well, Diana, let me ask you this. What was it like when the green flag came down?
When the green flag came down, the adrenaline went up, and I think the only thing I could actually hear was my heartbeat in my ears, and in my brain I was going, go, 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 and I just knew that I had to give it all that I had. So it was wonderful, absolutely wonderful, and I can't wait to do it again.
Now, Diana, you spend your time during the day, I suppose. You're teaching people to ride bikes, right? That's what you do?
Yes, I teach people how to ride. I teach a beginner's class for people on how to learn to ride a motorcycle, and we also cover safety skills, street skills, things that you can wear to protect yourself, and also just free strategies and the differences of riding a motorcycle as opposed to driving a car.
So what did you do? Wake up one day with a bad headache and decide you're going to go do this? I mean, how did this come about?
Well, in 2003, I had wanted to become a motorcycle instructor. And at that point, I had been riding street motorcycles for 23 years, and my primary interest at motorcycling at that point was cross-country touring. And I run around the country several times. Used to go up and down the eastern seaboard, and that was a lot of fun. But when I took the Rider's Edge course in 2003, it was a requirement in order to teach it that you had to take it. And I'm like, well, okay, I'm an experienced rider. You know, I should be able to get through this with no problem. And actually, there were several things that I learned when I took the course. And one of the things was, I knew how to corner, but I didn't know how to corner really well, and that's what I learned in this course. So I'm going to have to blame it on the two instructors that taught my class, which was Marty and Nick, and that's when I decided after that class that I needed to buy a Buell.
Stevie, how'd you run into this whole deal?
Ooh, well, I'd have to say one of my fellow instructors, Bill House, who was also racing with us last week along with Donnie Huffman. He's been doing road racing for several years, and he's raced with CCS and WIRA, and he's about 55 years old, so it's not like he's a spring chicken or anything, but the thing is, he's very athletic, and he's done this for a long time, and he kind of let me know the group he was racing with ARMA, and he goes, oh, come on down, it's a competitive group, but it's fun, and he would just keep talking to me every time we taught a class together, and it seemed like a lot of the experiences that he learned on the track made him a better instructor. And I thought, wow, that would be really cool. So I'm blaming it on Bill House. That's why I'm racing now. And hopefully my family will understand. My husband seems to be cool with it, but my parents aren't too sure about it yet.
Stevie.
Yeah.
How did you find this? Were you out there with Donnie Huffman looking over that bike you're going to buy? Is that how you ran across this whole deal?
Well, yeah. Donnie Huffman's a very bad influence on me. And you can hear Diana laughing in the background. She understands. Donnie is just one of the nicest guys that I've ever met. And he was just in total shock that here I was, the announcer for the All-Harley Drag Racing Association, and I wasn't riding a Harley.
Yep.
And he said, Stevie, this just can't be. And I said, well, you know, that's just kind of how it is for right now. So he's been steadily working me. You need to come by the trailer tonight, et cetera, you know, this type of thing. And finally he said, listen, before you go down to Gainesville, you need to come on down to this little track outside of Savannah, and I'll give you an opportunity to watch some road racing. It's really different. And, you know, I thought, I'm always going straight. Drag racing has been my life for 46 years, and I thought I'd be a great experience. And so I thought, well, he put me up in his trailer, and I had an opportunity to go down there and watch Donnie Huffman ride. At the same time, this is where I met Diana. And I will tell you a little bit about Donnie Huffman. In fact, I sent you an email. I don't know if you'll get it or not, a picture of Donnie going through the turns. And he actually took his drag bike. Now, this is a Sportster, wheelie bars on the back, takes the wheelie bars off and puts this thing out on the track on a road race course. And talk about a guy that can ride. Holy smokes.
Well, he races everything, of course, in the All-Harley Drags. And he's from the Lakeland, Florida area, right? And they own some bike shops down there, Harley.
Well, they have two bike shops down there. Yes,
yeah.
Two, Lakeland Harley-Davidson and Ridge Harley-Davidson, which is where Diana works. And so that's kind of how I met up with Diana. And first thing Donnie said, he says, I want you to come over and meet this girl. This is her first time out on a road course. She's never ever took the green flag before. You know, it's an all-new experience. He said, this would be a great story. And he was right, because it really was. It was exciting to see her energy and her excitement. And you could just tell she was bubbling. And this gal learns fast, I'm telling you. Because when she'd come in, we'd talk. And each time she came in, she says, I now understand this. I now understand that. She's grasping it fast. So unfortunately, I did not get to watch her see the green flag, but I definitely wanted to find out about it. And that's why when I talked with you, I said, we need to get this gal on the show.
That's cool.
So I think it'll be pretty cool.
That's neat.
Well, and I have to give Donnie credit because he was there in the beginning and watched me a few years ago when I first started to practice on a track. And he knows how uncomfortable I was, how nervous I was, and probably how slow I was going. And he's been very supportive. And, in fact, this weekend when we went down to Homestead to go to on track down there, I did low side on one of the curves and got right back up and got back riding and stuff. But that was my first fall down. And when I got back into the pits, he gave me a big hug and said, well, kid, welcome to the club. So I owe a lot of thanks to Donnie for being supportive and helping me out and giving me a lot of advice. That makes me want to get nervous. He gives me good advice.
That's cool.
Well, Diana, this organization that runs these races, where are they from? Do you know anything that much about them?
I know that I believe they just moved their corporate offices, and I know I want to say in the Carolinas, South Carolina, they have moved their corporate offices to, but it is a nationwide group, ARMA, American Historical Road Racing Association, and they have they race you know, antique bikes, all different kinds of classes, but they also race modern bikes as well.
All right. And Diana, which Harley dealership do you work for?
I work for Harley-Davidson Buell of Lakeland and uh-huh. Ridge Harley-Davidson Buell. We're owned by the same folks, and I work out of both dealerships.
So somebody wants to learn how to ride a bike, they can come down there and ask for you.
Oh, yeah, they can ask for me, and we do classes about three times a month. At either location, and we have a great time, and I try my best to give our students what they need.
I think I've seen signs for that out on I-4, as a matter of fact, now that I think about it.
Yeah, you probably saw some signs for us. We have billboards up.
Yeah, absolutely. And Stevie, what you got planned for tomorrow night, guy?
Well, tomorrow night we're going to go all Harley drag racing, and we're going to experience Terry Stewart. Here's a guy in Cresto Pro Drag. He has won 3 consecutive races in a row. 2 last year, and he started off down in Gainesville with a win this year. And he's looking for number 4 going into Arizona. And truly awesome rider. And he's on a string. I mean, this guy was literally untouchable 3 races in a row, and that's unheard of. And then we're also going to talk with James Serber in S&S Pro Stock. If you remember, we had James on the show. Last year. And I made the comment about that that James was going to make sure that Greg Krennic didn't get his parts so that he could have a shot at being first, because James ended up 3rd in the points and was always right there but never could quite make that move. Well, by golly, he didn't have to knock off anybody's parts this year. James Serber went right to the winner's circle, and we're going to talk about his win in S&S Pro Stock.
Cool.
Plus, something that's really cool, well, we're going to go 4 wheels now into an IHRA drag strip. Mike Bradley is going to talk about team championship racing, where they involve the teenagers can get involved with their parents with a car and come out and compete, to where they're going to allow 2 people in the vehicle, a father-son or a father-daughter or daughter-mother combinations, can go out and compete. And the local high school is putting a car together to let these kids go out there and compete with. So one of the neat things, they're going to get the kids involved, and this is a good place to bring them, good family entertainment, and this is truly family, because just like you go to high school football games,
yep.
Mike Bradley has his way. Hey, you're going to high school drag races.
All right, and that's tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, on the Straight Line with Stevie show right here on Real Racing USA. And, Diana, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to spend with us. It's fascinating, I'll tell you. It really is. And the best of luck to you and the rest of the year. And win some races.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and give it my best shot. My next official race is in May up at Talladega, and I'm in training now.
All right. We'll talk to you. I'm sure we'll talk to you later in the year. I just know we will.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
All right. And Stevie, we'll talk to you tomorrow night too, guy.
Absolutely. I promise you, I'll take you drag racing like you've never been before.
Got that right. All right. Stevie Letep, he is quite a guy. Rick, I tell you what, when you go to the drag strip and Stevie's there doing the announcing,
right?
This guy is totally on it, and everybody knows him, and everybody likes him really a lot. He's a good, good guy.
That's good for the announcer.
Yeah. And we're going to take a break here. We'll come back. We're going to talk to Billy Moyer Jr., and then as soon as we talk with him, and right after that, we're going to be going into the motor deal with Jeff Choquette. And
I guess they're not running Florida Spec Motors down at Charlotte County Motorsports Park this weekend, because Wayne Anderson's number 1 on their list of pre-registered drivers.
We'll be right back.
Bud Light presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today we salute you, Mr. Professional Movie Extra Guy.
Mr. Professional Movie Extra Guy.
Never in the history of cinema have so many done so little for so many. Anybody can pay $8 to see a movie, but only a true artist can be paid $8 to be in a movie.
Shiny, shiny star.
Snotty lead actors need lines, direction, motivation, not you. You sit on your butt perfectly in scene after scene.
Well, that's Hollywood.
A true pro, you're always focused, even if you're seldom in focus. So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, Mr. Nobody, because you're not just anybody, you're a paid anybody.
I don't recognize
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Hi, I'm Wayne Rudiman, and you're listening to Real Racing USA.
Hi, this is Tate Pierce, the driver of the number 81 Chevy Monte Carlo Tim Brink Underground Special, and we're live on Real Racing USA.
All right, we're back with Real Racing USA Live.
We really didn't go anywhere.
We didn't go anywhere at all. Well, never even left the damn desk.
Yeah, what we have with us, Rick, is Billy Moyer Jr., who's racing in Christy Hudson's AMP
Late
Model Series out there in Arkansas. Welcome to Real Racing USA, Billy.
Hi, thank you guys for having me.
So, hang on just a second. Okay, so now this is your first year in this series. Is that right?
Yeah, I ran some races last year, four or five, but it's, I think I'm going to run the further championship this year. So yeah, it'll be a first year.
Be your first full year on that tour. Where have you been racing before before this year?
Well, this has been my third year. Last year I ran the MSRA series. It's kind of right around here, and then the year before I just kind of hit and missed wherever was closest and stuff like that, really.
And right around here is out there, and you're from Batesville, Arkansas, right?
Yeah, Batesville, Arkansas, just like, I don't know, surrounding states like Missouri, Mississippi, Alabama, like tracks that are somewhat close. And I went with my dad, you know, whenever it was convenient to go with him also.
Did he teach you anything?
Yeah, he's taught me just about everything I know. Yeah. If not more. It helps out a ton to have him.
So what are some of the biggest accomplishments that you've been able to pull off here in your 3 years out there racing?
I don't know. I won the MSRA Rookie of the Year last year, I guess. And then I got fourth in their points. But in 06, I ran second at Columbus, or Magnolia Speedway in Columbus, Mississippi. It was a 15,000 to win. I ran second that night to Billy Drake. And I don't know, I've made my rookie year. In 06, I made four out of six World of Outlaw races I tried to make, so that was a pretty good accomplishment, I thought, for myself.
Now, Billy, what made you decide to run with the AMP series?
She just wants to help out the drivers so much, and the points is just incredible. You know, to win that 6,500 for a regional series is just pretty impressive, you know, and then they got this trailer thing. You can win a raffle, or you like get your name put in a hat, and it's like a $60,000 trailer, and it just makes it. I don't know if you finish in the top three. I don't know what third pace, somewhere around $3,000 or $4,000. It's still not a bad season if you finish third. You know, behind a couple good drivers. So I just think it makes a little more sense. And all these races are somewhat close to where I'm at, and don't have to drive as far, use as much diesel, et cetera, you know.
Now, tell us a little bit, I mean, you're from Arkansas. Tell us the state of late model racing, how it was prior to Christy coming along.
There wasn't any series. I ran, like, Poplar Bluff locally about five or six times in that the year before. I've only raced 1 year before last year, and you just had to run. You had to drive a lot farther. These series that they got right around here just make the racing a lot better, and fans get to see like regional drivers more instead of just going to these four or five bigger shows right around Arkansas. You don't really get to see the talent of guys right around here. Cause when you go to like the Show Me 100 and Topless 100, them are 40,000 plus to win races. You don't really see the talent of your regional drivers. You see your national drivers that come in to, that dominate, you know. There's the regional guys that sneak in there every now and then, but the national guys do it for a living, so of course they're going to be a little better.
How long you been in a late model, Billy?
This will be my third year.
Third year?
Yes.
And what were you in prior to the late model?
Nothing. I just worked for my dad for about 4 years.
So you climbed right into a late model. Of course, that's a natural progression for you. Tell me how you got the name Kid Smooth.
My dad, his nickname's Mr. Smooth. And I don't know, the World of Outlaw announcer, Rick Eshelman, just started calling me that, and I guess it stuck. So, and I'm not I'm a young kid, but I don't think I'm real wild. So, I mean, I'm not smooth yet, but I'm getting there. I'm not out of control, so I guess that's why it might have stuck a little bit. But mainly because of my dad's nickname is where it got it from.
Now, the chassis, is it a Moyer chassis?
Yeah, more here.
Imagine that.
Yeah, because, you know, we talked to the majority of people that we've talked to from Arkansas now are GRT chassis people.
Yeah, that's right on a Greenbrier. It's pretty dominant around here, but I don't know. I ran a Rayburn last year, but now I got this Victory Circle M1 Moyer chassis there. So, I don't know. Well, hopefully we can outrun his GRTs right around home, and they're extremely tough to beat. Joe Garrison, he builds them. Like I said, they're a very good car, but I think what we got's a lot better, and hopefully I'll show that this year and maybe sell some of our cars right around here.
Did you make the trip to Florida?
No. I'm in college, and plus that down there, that's about a lost cause unless you go down there and win about three or four. It's tough to make money down there and make shows, you know. It wouldn't be smart for me.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, the way your dad did, there's no doubt you could probably, that's going to not hurt the chassis sales this year. So where are you at in college? Tell us about that.
I'm a sophomore. I'll be a junior after this semester right here. I'm a business management major. I should graduate in 2010, May of 2010, hopefully.
So, do you plan on continuing to race after college?
Yeah, that's what I plan on doing, racing and working for my dad if I have to, but hopefully I can race like he is and maybe run like our Moyer Victory Circle house car, you know, for the years to come. But this degree, it doesn't hurt to have a degree for anything, and I don't know, it's always something to fall back on, like my dad and my mom and grandma, everybody tell me, but I'd much rather be racing full-time, but I don't know, I can pay my dues here for 4.5 years or so. It's not a, it's a pretty good time, you know. Everybody says college and it's how good a time it is, and they're right. But I don't know, nothing's probably better than racing, but I guess I got to do what I got to do.
I know, I'm looking at your schedule, man. You got a ton of races on your schedule.
Yeah. I don't even have them all on there yet, probably. I think last year we ran right around 50. We'll probably run more than that this year, probably around 50 or 60 at least, you know.
Well, that's only part-time because dirt late model guys, they race like 80 races a year, right?
Well, yeah, my dad last year actually ran, I think, 92 maybe.
It's amazing.
Unbelievable.
It just amazes us because, you know, we don't, you know, you look at guys that say race asphalt, if they race 90 races a year, mm-hmm. I mean, that just don't happen. You know, you guys on dirt, man, really go out and put it on.
Yeah, them people don't realize how hard it is. They think they got it rough. I understand they test a lot and stuff, but them guys like my dad and Eckert and Francis and Bloomquist, they race constantly, you know, and away from home a lot. So I don't know. It's not as easy as everybody thinks. Just being a dirt late model racer, you know, they think you're just your average redneck or something. But these guys make a living at it and make a pretty good living and work extremely hard at it, you know.
Oh, there's no doubt. And those guys are the stars. I mean, those guys and the, like say, the World of Outlaws sprint guys and you know, you guys that race dirt late models, I mean, you're the biggest stars in racing in America as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
You're out there, you probably got as big a fan following as many of the NASCAR guys, wouldn't you say, Rick?
Oh, no doubt about it. I mean, and it's one of the most thrilling forms of motorsports, in my opinion, that there is. You know, I just got hooked up with a dirt late model series down here in Florida, and these last two races I've announced were dirt late model races, and it's the first time I've ever announced a dirt car race, and it's just unreal. Non-stop action.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. So where's your first race this year, and when is that?
It's actually the day after tomorrow at Kentucky Lake Motor Speedway in Calvert City, Kentucky. There's three nights in a row there that pay $5,000 to win, two nights, and then 10 on Saturday.
All right. And what's your website there?
It's BillyMoyerJr.com.
Is that JR? Like,
yes, sir.
Okay.
JR.
Okay. Cool. Good.
All right, Billy, man. It was really good talking to you. Got anybody that helps you with the car?
Yeah, of course. Like, I've got my dad. He's helps me out a ton, but guys that work for my dad, Timmy and Steve, and then I got a couple guys that just help me around here regionally. You know, Ricky, Billy, and Slim, that's their nicknames. So they don't have real names. That's what they go by. And I got tons of sponsors that, like product sponsors, that just, you couldn't really do it without them. Like Victory, like my dad's chassis, of course, Victory Circle, and then Banner Valley Hauling and Valley Transfer and New Vision Graphics. Red Line Oil. Them, there's tons more, but them them guys right there help out quite a bit.
Well, we wish you all the luck in 2008. We'll probably be talking to you again real soon. And tell Christy Hudson from the AMP series that we said hi.
Okay, I will. Thank you guys for having me.
All right, Billy. Thank you.
All right, man. Take it easy. BillyMoyerJr.com. It's a nice-looking website, man. Of course, his car, I mean, it's identical to Dad's car, except it's the 21 Junior. A lot of stuff to check out. Check it out on BillyMoyerJr. That's JR.com. If you would like to call in later on this evening, it's 941-228-8359. 941-228-8359.
I think we got all that hooked up. Yeah, we're going to talk about some late model motors for the rest of this program, and we're probably going to run over. And if you have questions or things like that, you can reach us at 941-228-8359. Right now we have Jeff Choquette on the line with us, and also joining us here as part of the Real Racing USA team, Rob Bonehead Elting, back again. How you guys doing?
Doing good. How are you guys?
We're doing good. Anytime we're talking to people like you, we're doing good, man.
We finally got all the dirt out of our equipment from Hendry County.
Oh, talking to John, not me.
Hey, Rob. Rob, you know what fixed that problem we were having on Inside Florida Racing last night?
What's that?
Just plug the mixer into a different power strip. Bingo. Done deal.
Well, made it tough, but hopefully people listening weren't having to deal with it.
Yeah. But anyway, Jeffrey, you called, gave us a call last week, I believe, and there were some things that you didn't necessarily, I guess, I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but basically you had some things you didn't necessarily agree with. That
and that's very true. I was, just for some reason, you know, I catch every other show that you guys have, and for some reason, you know, I just happened to tune into that show. It was all about the Florida spec motors, and you know, I just felt a lot of the so-called facts that you guys were receiving were, you know, very false, and you know, I just kind of wanted to give you guys some of my ideas, or you know, some of my facts that I know. You know, because I run the motor and, you know, obviously Progressive builds all my motors, you know, so I have a very good relationship with them. And, you know, just to tell you guys a little bit about it so you guys understand a little bit more what's going on, because I know all the listeners out there and you guys like Jack and everybody else, you know, you guys do the radio stuff and you guys are good at doing that. And you know, you guys sometimes tend to not understand a lot about, you know, the motor end and setups and tech and, you know, how the cars work and stuff. You know, that's why you guys do what you do and, you know, that we do the racing.
Hey, Jeff, that's why we brought Bonehead in with us tonight, because we didn't want to come to this gunfight without a gun at all. We wanted to at least have something in our back pocket.
But the first thing I just want to start off, you know, for all the listeners that are listening in, because it seems like it's a pretty popular show tonight with everything that's going on the message board. But about Off Alabama, that had nothing to do with the motor situation. I could have took the motor out and I could have went around the track like Fred Flintstone, and I still wouldn't have gone any faster, any slower. We went up there in the guaranteed concrete cars. And it was a brand new car, just put together. We struggled straight off the trailer with it. Actually, we had too much motor when we went up there. We had a Ford motor, and we were running restricted plates that kill, you know, anywhere from 50 to 100 horsepower out of the motor. But I just wanted to clear that up with everybody, because I did come off of some weeks, and we did win a lot of races, and we go up to Off Alabama and get lapped in a race, but. That was it was a tough weekend.
What Jeff's talking about is last week's comments by Wayne Anderson saying how you had dominated speed weeks with the spec motor, go to op and you have your problems up there. Now, but you said you went up there what with the steelhead Ford?
Yeah, we went up there with the steelhead Ford, which, believe it or not, makes about 35 to 40 more horsepower than a spec motor makes.
Right, they're in the 600 to 635 range, right?
The Ford motors,
a long time ago used to be in that range. Right now they're, I mean, they're up to 635 range, but the Ford the Ford's motors we have now are almost to the 650 range, 640, 650 range. You know, and a spec motor has 610. You know, what advantage do you have by running a motor that has 610 horsepower versus a motor that has 650? You know, in my eyes, that's not an advantage at all. You know, the motor is a very good motor. It's a very, very reliable motor. Go ahead. I thought I heard somebody talk. The motor, you know, it's a very reliable motor. For somebody that is coming in, you know, like Wayne mentioned, you know, people sit there and have $100,000 in motors. Well, this motor allows you not to have that $100,000 in motors, you know, because you don't need them, because this is an all-around motor. Yes, you get a weight break, but, you know, it's not that big of an advantage like what some people that don't run the motors make them out to be.
All right, now, let's say, steel-headed Ford motor, how much?
About $640 on the average.
No, money-wise.
$40.
Money-wise, you're looking $35,000,
$40,000. Fast car spec motor.
16. This isn't, you know, this is just roundabout numbers.
Sure.
And it was 16,500, 17,000.
It doesn't make a whole lot of, if you got 20 or 30 more horsepower, when you go to places like that are real abrasive, like Five Flags, does it make much difference?
I mean, qualifying, yes, but I mean, there's a lot of people that go up there. Okay, when we go up there, we have a 9-to-1 Chevy motor, and after qualifying is done and over with, we end up knocking 100 horsepower out of the motor, you know, as soon as qualifying is done. You know, so that track is, you really need like two different setups. You need one with a lot of horsepower and one, you know, with no horsepower.
Okay, tell us a little bit about the 9-to-1s then.
9-to-1 Chevys is, you know, if the way it used to be, if you went to Lakeland with a 9-to-1 Chevy, you know, you were out to lunch. You know, you just couldn't keep up with the Fords. And now, you know, the spec motors are a really easy motor to drive. They're very forgiving, and it allows somebody to go to Lakeland and not have to buy that $40,000 Ford. And they can go there with a spec motor, and they can actually keep up this time.
Now, you know, I mean, a little bit of what Wayne said and some other people have mentioned is that, you know, this is going to hurt speed weeks next year. The northern guys don't want to come down here. And in all reality, at speed weeks in Lakeland, the northern cars were down, I mean, as far as attendance. But then again, you had Eddie Hoffman running right out front there, and he's a northern car, right?
Yeah, you know, I don't think it's going to hurt attendance. I think the economy is going to hurt attendance. You know, the economy is hurting people in Florida going to speed weeks. You know, so what is it going to do for a guy that has to travel with diesel at $4.10 a gallon now? You know, a guy that has to travel almost, you know, 20 hours to get here. Yeah, you know, it's going to be a lot of fuel to get here, you know, and they don't just want to spend that kind of money. So I don't think it's going to hurt attendance. You know, all they're really doing is they're giving everybody a chance. You know, so the select few that had the Fords, you know, they're giving everybody a chance to keep up with them. Is what they're doing with the spec motor.
So when you went to the Rattler, why didn't you couldn't take a spec motor? Is that right? You couldn't run them?
Yeah, because everybody has blown it out of proportion. You know, they make it seem like, you know, I have a 430 dirt car under my hood. You know, a dirt car that makes 900 horsepower. It's not that. You know, what's going on here in the spec motor world between, you know, Alabama, Pensacola, and down here in South Florida is it's a motor war, and it's all about money. You know, they don't want to let their motors down here. They don't want to let our motors up there, and it's all because who's going to sell more motors? You know, if they let our motors up there, people are going to buy some motors down here from Steve at Progressive, and it's just vice versa. And it's a sad deal, and you got people going around saying, you know, the motor's illegal, nobody knows what's in them. If anybody at any point in time wants to bring me a spec motor fresh out of Steve's shop, I will be more than happy to give them my spec motor out of my car. That's how equal I know they are, and that's how much trust I have in Steve at Progressive.
So Jeff Choquette throwing down the challenge.
Yeah, and Rob, just jump in here anytime you want, man.
Also, I just want to throw one thing in before you go. Dick Anderson also runs a spec motor. You know, I believe Dick is, you know, he loves racing, and, you know, he if everybody had to run, you know, the $30,000 and $40,000 motors, he would have a hard time racing. The spec motor allows the 92 car to really go out there and compete on the track, you know. And Dick doesn't have no big sponsors, and Dick's the same way I am. If there's anybody that wants to come and bring a spec motor, he'll be more than happy to trade them for his motor, too.
Rob, go ahead.
I'm going to tell you, I just think that in a lot of cases, you know, the amount of money that's being spent anyways in super late model racing and late model racing, period, for the amount of payout that we get these days is kind of ridiculous anyways when you offset and you talk about spending $40,000 on a motor to go run a race to win, you know, $5,000. Just seems kind of crazy, but that's a different point. The point of the motors, the reason why they came out with the spec motor, because they wanted a motor that didn't have to get tore apart, that would be a fast motor and be, you know, the thing of the future. And the parts all can be bought from the dealership, so they're all just supposed to be put together and there's not supposed to be machining involved.
Mm-hmm.
The whole issue that I think that a lot of guys have is that if you have 3, 4, 5, 10 motor builders that you allow to put these things together and seal them up, there is no power to be out there in these tech sheds that are tearing these sealed motors apart. There's no listing put out of what's in a spec motor, because I should be able to build my own spec motor, okay, and spend less than $16,000 on putting that motor together if that's the way I choose to do it. And the thing of trying to seal up motors where they never get torn apart in tech, that's ridiculous. There's no reason why they still shouldn't pull a head off a motor. We pull heads off of motors for years, dude. And Dick Anderson, I guarantee you, okay, if we were 10 years back from where we're at today, okay, and he had his motor that was in his car of the day when he used to race it, and some cats were out here beating him with this other spec motor, and he didn't know what was in it, and he wasn't privy to everything like he is today, he wouldn't have liked it. He wouldn't have liked it one bit. And,
I agree.
So, you know, the spec motor is a great thing because it dropped the price down to a comparable amount where more guys could afford to go buy this motor. And in that way, that's great. A guy like me, I'm not a guy that can even talk about in the aspect that you guys are talking today because of the places that you guys are racing and where you're at in racing today as opposed to where I'm at. I made a comment yesterday on the show. I run the same crank and rods in my car that I've had since 1998. That doesn't mean I don't have, you know, 580 or 590 horsepower in the motor I have. I've never complained about horsepower because I'm running down here at Charlotte County Motorsports Park where you don't need it. All right?
Yeah,
if I was going to go to Lakeland, all right, that'd be a different story. I'd want to have something that's comparable with what everybody else has. So if I show up there with my steelhead, okay, aftermarket steelhead flat top Chevrolet that's only a 558 maximum, okay, and it's got a regular roller cam in it. All right, I'm showing up with that. I'm going to run the same carburetor, and I've actually got to weigh more, okay, than you do with that Progressive spec motor in your car. You're going to get a weight break and get to run the same size carburetor, but you got aluminum heads. And you got, you know, 12-to-1 pistons in the motor, but we're supposed to be running on the same carburetor. In my day, okay, when I say my day, I'm talking about when we ran either high compression, 9-to-1, or a flat top, okay? If you ran a flat top steelhead motor like I had, you got a 750. If you run a motor like you guys are running, that spec motor, you had to run a 390 on it. You put a 390 on that, you'd never hear any complaints from the guys with the flat top.
Nobody would never run them because they would never keep up. You have to. From my understanding, what was made was is the spec motor was made to be comparable to the 9-to-1 Chevys and to the steel-headed Fords. If you put a 390 on that spec motor, it's going to kill it. You wouldn't even be able to run with the Limiteds. You know, and talking about the weight break, are you telling me that 50 pounds is worth 500 horsepower or 100 horsepower? That's not even comparable. You know,
the steel-headed Ford needs to be put into its own category, too. That's not even – you can't compare that steel-headed Ford that you're running to the steel-headed Chevrolet, you know, 558 maximum Chevrolet that I'm talking about. It's not even comparable. That Ford needs to be in its own weight class of its own.
Oh, I agree, but nobody's complaining about that. Everybody wants to complain about these spec motors, you know. Actually, there in New Smyrna, I weigh 20. You're allowed to weigh 2,700. I weighed 2,730. So I was 20 pounds lighter than what, you know, a steelhead Ford or steelhead Chevy. You know, a steelheaded Ford makes 50 more horsepower than a steelhead Chevy, but nobody's complaining about that.
Well, is anybody complaining about the spec motors besides Wayne? I mean, just on principle.
It's just mainly the people up in the Panhandle. Because there are a lot of people, there are a select few that are going around, and, you know, just because they don't know about it, they're just bad-mouthing the motor, and they don't know anything about it.
Are they running McGunnakill?
I don't know what motors they're running or anything, but, you know, a lot of people use Hamners up in that area and McGunnakill motors.
Yeah, we're going to have Dwayne McGunnakill on following your deal here, and...
I really think that they need to get some kind of standard, okay?
Well, it's like in Florida, there tends to be one. Are you saying there needs to be a standard nationwide?
Well, I think it would be great if they had a spec motor and a spec series, and they listed what was supposed to be in it, and this is the motor you're supposed to run.
But they
as far as having them sealed up, you can't seal them up because guys are still going to get in them. That's why I said don't insult my intelligence, but I think because there's some seal on your motor that somebody wasn't paid something somewhere to make something different. Because if you give people avenues to cheat, somebody's going to cheat.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. But nobody but the Fast Car Series has even given the motor a chance. The guys up there, nobody will let the motor run because everything has been so blown out of proportion about people that don't know what they're talking about. You know, people that don't run them, and that nobody will even give them a chance to run. You know, they wouldn't let them run up there at the Rattler because the guy told me, quote unquote, I've heard horror stories about the motor.
Don Nerone sent us a letter in the last few days. He sent a letter to us here at Real Racing USA, and part of what he said is this. He says the spec motor from Fast Car has been in existence for 3 years. When the top teams did not run them, no one cared. As soon as Dick Anderson put one in his car, they were too good. Could it be a good car? He said Mike Fritz, Jeff Choquette, and Jeff Schofield dominated super late model racing with Fords. The Fords had an advantage. Before that, the 9-to-1 was the thing to run, and we all had to have one. Now the Fast Car spec motor is the preferred motor. When the 9-to-1 was in the $35,000 range, the Ford about $40,000, and the Chevy about $30,000. Soon, all the teams after losing with a motor that cost between $30,000 and $50,000, were happy to change to a $16,000 motor that will last and be competitive. That's part of what he said.
My Ford motor, I think it's got more miles on 95 than it's got on the racetrack. You know, after spending so much money, I mean, being realistic here, we've probably spent $50,000 to $75,000 range just, you know, after the Ford blows up and just having to keep fixing it because that's the premier motor. You know, after spending so much money on that, it just doesn't make sense. Hey, let's go get a spec motor and save that money and spend it somewhere else.
If I was spending that kind of money, $50,000 and stuff like that, I'd just go to Crate Motor, run Crate Class.
You know what I'm saying? It's either It's either you go broke trying to keep up with the Fords, or you make a compromise with the spec motor, or you just go crate motor racing. And once we go crate motor racing, the next thing that's going to happen is everybody's going to complain about you cheating in the motor.
Yeah, I think that if they, when I said there needs to be a standard, I think that one of the things is that they should have kept some restrictions on these motors back then, 10 years ago.
Yeah, but we're not there 10 years ago. We're here now.
But motor-wise, where they're at today, though, and where they're at today is spread out. There's all kinds of different motors in the cars today. And what really gets aggravating, like talking to Brian last night, Finney, you know, where you're hearing guys talk about where they've had to take these motors that they spent all this money on, and they've got to put them away and go buy one of these to be competitive. And it shouldn't be that way. They should make enough concession and enough weight break or figure out what's going to make it even so the steel-headed Ford can run against a flat-top Chevrolet steel-headed motor that can run against one of these spec motors, and that everybody's close to even. Is everybody going to be happy? They're never going to be happy, but at least get it to where it's close enough so that I don't want to see these guys that have spent the money on the spec motor not be able to run it anywhere. They should be able to run that wherever they want. But it's going to have to be something that's conform with, like you said, everybody. That, you know, like going to the Rattler and those guys hearing horror stories and not letting you run it. If everybody knew what was in it, okay, they probably wouldn't say that. But it's such a secret what's in the freaking things, you know. It's really ridiculous.
It's not that it's a secret that's what's in them. Actually, if you guys would like to find out what's in them, I could probably get them on the line tonight, Steve from Progressive. I know you guys have probably got your show planned out.
We can do whatever you want to do, Jeff.
Whatever you want to do, Jeff.
I mean, it's up to you guys. I can give you his number, and I'm pretty sure, you know, he'll be more than happy to get on the line and to explain to people what, I mean, because I can give you my opinions, but I'm not a motor builder, you know, and I don't.
All right, I'll tell you what. Tell you what, Jeff, hang on there a minute. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to sort this out, and we'll be right back. So just hang on the line there. We'll be right back. Racing USA.
This is Joe Irwin.
And this is Wayne Jefferson.
From Jefferson Irwin Racing.
And you're listening to Real Racing USA.
Carnac.com, your online racing community since 1997. Carnac.com is racing classifieds, racing photos, racing news, lively racing message boards, chat rooms, multimedia, and so much more. And if your race team or racing business needs a website, or your website needs a fire lit under it, look no further than Carnac.com. From affordable web hosting to fancy flash animation, Carnac gets it done.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Bathroom Stall Dirty Joke Writer.
Mr. Bathroom Stall Dirty Joke Writer.
Armed with your trusty marker, you do the impossible. Make an incredibly dirty place even dirtier.
Scribble it down now.
Your jokes make us pee our pants. Lucky for us, they're down around our ankles.
Yeah!
You answer our most vexing question. Whatever happened to the man from Nantucket?
Oh, that's a good one.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, oh ruler of the rhyme. Because when we're looking for a good time, we call you.
Oh, Mr. Bathroom Stall Dirty Joke Rider.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Are you ready to win? If so, it's time to move up to 5-Star Race Car Bodies. 5-Star Race Car Bodies designs and manufactures the highest quality race car body components. Short tracks, drag strips, road courses, and even in the desert, 5-Star has one driving passion: to help you win. 5-Star Race Bodies designs and manufactures for NASCAR, Grand Am, NHRA, IHRA, SCCA, short track asphalt, short track dirt, USAC, USAR, Hooters Pro Cup, and the ASA Late Model Series. Find out more today at 5starbodies.com.
Power Master is your ASA series sponsor for the XS Power batteries. Power Master is pleased to announce the introduction of the XS Power series of batteries. XX Power batteries for racing applications and batteries for your car audio application. 12-volt batteries for street machines, street rods, off-road vehicles, and even motorcycles. XS Power batteries means 30% more power and no battery spilling. Power Master also carries your starters and alternators. Visit us on the web at www.powermastermotorsports.com.
Hello, I'm Frank Bartles, and this here's my partner, James Brown. As the weather starts getting too hot, we hope you will reach for one of these. New Ben James Brown Wine Cooler.
It tastes good.
They come in three funky flavors. Gravity Grape.
Get down.
Crime of Passion Fruit.
Oh, Timothy.
And my personal favorite, Papaya.
Papaya's got a brand new bag.
It'll get you off faster than a big city lawyer.
Woo!
And a single pack serves 6 to 10. Just like James.
New Bartles and James Brown Wine Coolers. The cooler cooler, made in the cooler.
Now behind bars everywhere.
And thank you for your support.
Well, Jack, you know, when we first encountered this, when Jeff gave us a call and stuff, we started making phone calls, and we started getting phone calls and emails, posts on the message board about this, and it's something that a lot of people are interested in.
Passionately.
Passionately, very passionate. Of course, the super late model game has always been one of the top racing endeavors in the state of Florida and Southern racing.
Well, I'll tell you what, we are very proud to have here as a guest on Real Racing USA Live from McGonigal Racing Motor, Racing Engines, Dwayne McGonigal. Welcome to Real Racing USA.
Thank you. It's nice to be here this evening.
All right. And we still have Rob there with us hanging out. And
I'm still here, yeah. Me and Dwayne, we're just having a little conversation about motor building.
All right, Rick, do you know where do you want to start with this, Rick? Are we talking about sealed, the difference between sealed motors, crate motors, spec motors? Where are we going here?
Well, pretty much as Rob was saying, the sealed deal kind of keeps everybody out of the motor. Isn't that kind of what you were saying, Rob? You don't know what's in the motor?
Right. You know, they seal them up at the different motor builders, but in actuality, nobody really realizes what's in these motors. You know, it's never... They say, okay, it's a spec motor, but only these certain motor builders are going to be able to build them. And if you've got some real good control, you know, over these shops and, you know, I guess you don't have a lot of collusion going on with the guys that are driving, maybe it could be worked out. But really what ultimately has to happen is in order to keep guys honest, motors have to come apart. Heads have to come off of motors, things like that. Or they have to come up with some kind of devices to test these. And ultimately, if the spec motors are ever really going to fly, then they need to say, okay, here's the part numbers of the parts you can use. There's no machining that you're allowed to do. This is the tolerances you can have here, here, and here. And this motor can be, the parts can be bought for $10,000. Okay, you want to put it together yourself, do it. If you want a qualified guy to put it together, this is a guy that can do it.
Okay, right. Dwayne, you tell us, give us your take on this, and you can start and just tell us your take on this whole deal.
Well, I mean, basically there is a definite difference between a sealed engine and a spec engine. We manufacture a sealed engine that we've manufactured for approximately 6 years now, running in a super late model type series. And I'm just catching part of your conversation. I was working hard at the shop tonight, so I didn't catch your whole show. But, you know, there is a definite difference between the two. And integrity is very important on a sealed engine. The promoters and the racer have to have faith that you're doing what you say you're doing. The motors are equal as far as dyno parts, those kind of things. And there's a real difference there on a spec engine. And there's a lot of different spec engines across the country. But there's no real standard, you know, as far as how a spec engine should be handled. And it is a tough situation for promoters. It's putting a lot of pressure on the promoter to decide how am I going to make sure that these things are legal, you know. Personally, that's why we've kind of gone with the sealed engine because we worked very hard to keep a control over that situation, and we worked very diligently with the promoters and the tech people so that they have confidence that if one of our engines shows up, they know what they've got and they can count on that. If there's any issues, I have no problems with them pulling them out. We've had them brought into the shop by the promoters, dyno taken apart, things like that, to ensure that they're the way they're supposed to be.
Now, if say a promoter does bring you an engine, do you allow an outside person to tear down the motor, let's say, while in your shop?
Normally what happens is we will take that engine apart, but we will not touch that engine. Or actually, we do not have possession. I do not want possession of that engine until it shows up at our shop with the promoter, whoever's bringing it in, and with them there, we will take it apart and or dyno it first, however they want to do it. But normally we do take them apart because we also know how the engine's supposed to be manufactured. And if there is a problem that someone's tampered with it, we were going to know that first more than other people, you know. But most of your promoters will send their tech people, someone who knows something about an engine, you know, for a disassembly.
Now let me ask you this, and Jeff Choquette said he heard this at the Rattler, that there were nightmarish stories about the Florida spec motor. Do you know anything about that?
Well, I mean, I travel all over the country to races, and I love super late model racing. I see a lot of racing, and I'm not going to say there's nightmarish stories, but I think there's some discrepancies. I mean, anytime you have a spec engine, you know, it's a little different. There's the standards are a little different than, say, a sealed engine. So I think there's some problems there. There's definitely one thing that I feel all spec engines or sealed engines have to have, and that's a rev limit. You know, the whole purpose of spec engine is basically twofold: save cost and money for the racer, and improve the car counts for the promoter. And I think that a rev limit is a necessity in anything like that for longevity and to accomplish that goal.
What kind of this is Rob, by the way. What kind of horsepower do your motors put out, and how much are they? Super late model mode.
Our motors put out approximately 590 horsepower. We have two versions, a GM and a Ford version. The GM version is right at 16,000. The Ford version is 17,500. Our basic package comes as a complete package. Dry sump system, carburation, sealed ignition system that's manufactured by Mallory for us at our given rev limit.
Which is? What's your rev limit?
7,200 is our rev limit.
7,200. Okay. Well, I understand definitely the sealed motor program. Now, let me ask, where are you from? Where are you from?
We're in Muncie, Indiana.
Muncie, Indiana. So how many guys do you build motors for?
Well, you know, I'll tell you what, we've been very busy, and we were just talking about the shop the other day. Last year, we either rebuilt or new approximately 250 engines. So we have sold engines in over 40 states and Canada. So we're covering the country pretty well, a lot of different racers.
What series are you mainly involved in super late model racing?
Well, of course, we build two different things. Our sealed engine covers like the super late model, CRA, PASS, all those type things. And then we build our version of a crate engine, a Ford version of a crate engine that covers the multiple ASAs and gas series, SNOS type series. We basically have something that covers any major circuit in America.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting.
Now, have you come across any of your sealed motors that have been tampered with?
Yes, we have had a couple that have had some things done to those, and you know, it's going to happen. I don't think that problem is near as widespread as what racers and promoters feel that it is. I mean, we have built so many different engines and seen so many. I don't think it's as big a problem as what people think. We're constantly working on our seal program to improve that, you know, to make sure that these kind of things don't happen. But, you know, I don't think it's as widespread a problem as a lot of people honestly think. You know, I've got a lot of good racers who've won lots of major races out there. And I basically, in my mind, the horsepower of, you know, majority of the engines out there. And I've seen some major races won on mile tracks where I know for a fact that it was not horsepower that won that race. You know, you've got to have the full package if you want to compete, especially in today's racing world.
That's right. That's one thing that's for sure. You got to have a good package, a good motor program, and, you know, that's why in the aspect, like Jeff Choquette was on before talking, I'm not even racing in that aspect, you know, and to keep up with, like he's talking about, guys that got $40,000 and $50,000 motors in their car, which to me is ridiculous in super late model racing that we do in Florida. It doesn't pay. It's a lose-lose situation to be putting a $50,000 motor inside a super late model to run at any race in this state.
It's crazy. But basically, so what you're saying, Dwayne, is that the spec motor in Florida, there's too many questions about it being able to be tampered with? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I mean, a spec engine is, there's numerous spec engines across the country, and basically it's a sheet of paper saying, okay, we're going to use these parts. Maybe one person will build all those engines. Maybe multiple people will. But like was some of you were stating earlier, on a spec engine, it's going to have some exact specifications. You know, we run these exact parts, the tolerances of how it's machined, and it needs a rev limit. You know, I feel that any spec engine needs a rev limit to accomplish its real goal. But without a rev limit, you're basically, you know, you're being awful close to the old-fashioned build engine, you know, because RPMs cost money. And, you know, and that was our whole purpose when we started this, to put a rev limit on the engine and construct an engine that could run at that lower RPMs that can run 3,000 to 4,000 laps with zero maintenance. I mean, change your oil, change spark plugs, no adjusting valves. It's a hydraulic roller that we use. So that's the whole purpose, keep the racer racing.
But what I'm saying though is the basic problem with the Florida spec motor is that people don't know what's going in the motor, right?
Well, I mean I don't want to step on anybody's feet here. I mean,
is it just the rev limit then? Is that the deal? Like for instance, if say the Florida spec motors, if they put a chip on it now and change their philosophy about it, decide to go with a chip, just for the sake of argument here, would that smooth out the issue so that these motors could then be run in other places without the problems they have now?
Well, I think that would definitely be a major step in that direction. You know, you have to deal with the promoters on a lot of these different issues, you know, but I think that would be a major step in the right direction, you know.
I do too.
Okay, so go ahead, Rick.
No.
Okay.
Oh, go ahead. So I'm just trying to figure out beyond, you know, limiting the RPMs on the motor. That's the basic problem. Is that why not, if these guys are going to say run a CRA race or a race at Op Alabama, they don't force them to use a chip to run 7,200 RPM. They can't do that with the spec motor.
Well, I mean, that could be done. I do believe that the CRA series rules specify a rev chip for that particular engine. I'm not sure if anyone has raced one of those engines up north, you know, in some of
right.
the, out of the panhandle and on up in that direction. But I do believe in the rules. There is a rev limit on that Florida type spec.
What does one of the McGonagall sealed motors, what price range are we talking about for those motors, super late model races?
What'd you do, step away for a little while, Jack?
He's taking care of
business. Yeah, he did. Let him hear it again.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah, okay. You got me again, Rob. Yes, I was. I was off taking care of some phone calls off the air. That's right.
16,000 to 17,000, depending if you got a Ford or not.
So it's basically the same price range as a progressive motor.
There's no reason why they all shouldn't be able to run together. There should be some kind of
something that should have been done. These guys shouldn't have been turned away with it. I don't think it's horror stories. My issue that I have absolutely has nothing to do with horror stories about it. More power to these guys that want to run them. I just say that if they want to get people to be more receptive to a spec motor, let them know what's in it. Let other guys build it if they want, and get tech guys that are willing to pull a head off of it. You can tell if it's cheating if you pull a head off of it, if you know the tolerances that you're looking for. Because if anybody's cheating, that's where they're going to be cheating.
Well, Dwayne, let me ask you this, and hopefully this wasn't, I'm not going backwards again, but like promoters get together and hammer out things, at least sometimes they do. They get together, and some things can get sorted out in promoters' meetings and so forth. Do engine builders do that, or is it like every man's an island unto himself?
Well, you're right. Every man's an island to himself. I mean, the engine building thing has always been such a secretive thing, you know. But it's a changing world out there. I mean, General Motors came out with their crate engine, you know, 8-9 years ago. And right then we could see that the world's changing, you know. And you've got to adapt, and engine builders are going to have to do that. I mean, to a certain degree, we're going to have to work together for everyone to survive.
What about Toyota now? Is that going to bring in a whole new aspect, or is it like Dodge? People are going to stay away from it.
Well, I think we all know that Toyota has money. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, I would not be surprised if Toyota doesn't try to do something here. You know, they're into this 360 Sprint deal. But Toyota always seems to try to control everything themselves. So it'll be interesting as far as the aftermarket people and the independent engine builders, what happens there.
So you guys who are independent engine builders like yourself and Progressive and other Amner and so forth, is it possible that if Toyota comes into this game that you guys could find yourself arming together?
Well, you know, you could be right. And Jeff and I have been working together a little bit the way it is, you know, on our different engines that we're working on right now. And you'll see some more things together out of us here in the future, because like I say, it's a changing world and we're going to have to adapt to it.
Dwayne, your business revolves around late model racing. What's your feelings on the state of late model racing in the country?
Well, I think the economy is going to say a lot about what happens here in the near future. I mean, it's not as strong as it used to be. I mean, I grew up on asphalt late models. That's what we love. And we're trying to do everything we can to help it survive. But it's just like everything. It's an expensive endeavor, you know. But I think that show just proves why we're going to have to work together more. Promoters, engine builders, chassis manufacturers, everyone, so we can keep it strong.
Hey, Dwayne, I'd be glad to take one of your motors. You want to send it down here for me? I'll strap it in my
You phone. Knew he was going to do that. Rick, you knew he was going to start.
I knew
he was going to.
Proud for you, Dwayne. I'll put your name all over the side of it, and I'll save it. I'll
we get one,
it in their butt.
We get one of the top engine builders in the country, and Rob's panhandling, Rick. What are we going to do with this guy?
That's just bonehead.
I'll put him on the list. I've got a very long list requesting.
I'm sure you do, Dwayne.
And you'll slip him in right there at the bottom, right?
Yes, sir.
Don't think I won't ask Steve the same thing.
Well,
Dwayne, can we call on you again?
Sure.
All right. Good
hey,
deal.
Dwayne, it was nice talking to you. I enjoyed you.
Yeah, it's some great information, Dwayne. And I'm sure we're going to get a ton more questions about all this deal. And we're going to need your opinion on it.
I'm glad to give my comments. Thank you, fellas.
All right, Dwayne.
All right, Dwayne. McGonigal from
McGonigal.com.
There you go.
Great stuff on that website.
Mr. Rob?
Very interesting guy, you know, and I want to say you guys, you need to continue this show. You need to keep it going, even though it's 9 o'clock. But I'm definitely going to listen. I want to hear what... You know, Steve and...
We got Steve McGinnis and Jeff Choquette coming back to join us here right after a short break. Rob, and I'll talk to you later for sure.
All right, man. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Rob. Well, we knew Rob was going to ask for a motor.
Man, I can't believe this guy. He'll panhandle for anybody. We'll be right back.
This has turned into a very interesting scenario here. We'll be right back here on Real Racing USA Live.
Bud Light presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today we salute you, Mr. Professional Movie Extra Guy.
Mr. Professional Movie Extra Guy.
Never in the history of cinema have so many done so little for so many.
You're a star.
Anybody can pay $8 to see a movie, but only a true artist can be paid $8 to be in a movie. Snotty lead actors need lines, direction, motivation, not you. You sit on your butt perfectly in scene after scene.
That's Hollywood.
A true pro, you're always focused, even if you're seldom in focus. So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, Mr. Nobody, because you're not just anybody, you're a paid anybody.
I don't recognize
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Hi, I'm Wayne Rudiman, and you're listening to Real Racing USA.
The O'Reilly Auto Parts ASA Fast Lane, only on Real Racing USA. Meet the racers of America's most exciting short track racing series every Wednesday night from 8 p.m. until 9 p.m. From the Milwaukee Mile to Bristol Motor Speedway, Five Flags in Nashville, the ASA is the racing series where young talent meets wily veterans in extreme short track competition. O'Reilly is America's auto parts store, and the ASA is America's premier late model series. O'Reilly Auto Parts ASA Fast Lane gets you close to the action and behind the scenes with the real stories from the drivers themselves. The O'Reilly ASA Fast Lane, only on Real Racing USA.
Bud Light presents Real American Heroes.
All right, we're back here on Real Racing USA Live. It's Spec Night here on Tuesday night on Real Racing USA Live. Jack, who do we got on the phone with us?
Let's see. We have Jeff Schuketz back with us, and we have Steve McGinnis from Progressive Racing Engines.
Now, Steve, did Jeff let you know the rundown of what we're talking about tonight?
Yeah, he was telling me a little about what was going on, and I was listening to what Dwayne's comments was.
Now, tell us, give us your side of the story right now.
Okay, Dwayne thinks that we're building a spec motor is not a sealed motor. The spec motors are sealed. Every motor is sealed, got numbers on it. It's got three different seals on it. It has numbers on the seals. And each time we update it or refresh in somebody's motor or we build a new motor, it gets faxed to all the tracks, to all the promoters. And we have ways of, we have things that's in the seals itself that we can check at the track, a quick check to see if anybody's been tampering with it or anything. And we have caught people before tampering with the limited late model motors, which they're going to auction off at the first Goodyear race.
That's right. This coming Saturday night, Don Rohn said that today. That's right. They have one of the motors that they're going to auction off. You don't even have, you got 15 days to pay.
What are they going to do with the motor, though? It's illegal, right?
No, they sent it.
They fixed it.
Oh, okay.
The owner of the motor paid to have it right. We put all the parts in it right, took all the wrong parts out, and Nerone's going to auction it off at the first race.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Now, I can remember a couple of years ago, it was Chris Fontaine had problems with keeping the seals on his motor. Do you remember that when they pulled the motor at DeSoto and they sent it down to you?
Yep.
But of course, the motor came out fine, right?
Yeah, I put it on a dyno, and it was right where it was before.
Now, the main thing that I'm getting from people is that they can't get a list of what's in this motor.
I faxed a list of every part that's in that motor to CRA.
So, the part number and everything, right?
Everything. Everything
now,
in that motor is in CRA. The tech officials, every track promoter has a list of everything that's in that motor. And we have, like here, Jack Landis asked me, okay, because he bought a motor from us.
Right.
And he asked us, he said, Steve, am I going to get the same motor Choquette's got? And I said, I had it in the back of my truck. And I told him, I'll tell you what, you buy Choquette's motor, and we'll swap it right now and put that one in your car, and we'll put the one in back of my truck in Choquette's car.
That's exactly what Jeff said earlier in the show. Now, and I'd asked Dwayne about that. I said, the list of the parts and stuff. I couldn't get what you just told me from him.
What's that now?
I couldn't get what you just told me that you faxed a list of parts with part numbers and everything.
Let me clear something up.
Uh-huh.
I do not want to go and build motors for all them series up there. I would just like the racers down here to be able to travel
right
and race up there, and their spec motors be able to come down here and race. If our spec motor goes up there and has to run a chip, I have no problem with that. But McGonigal's motor is a different bore and stroke combination than ours is. His is a bigger motor. It's got more stroke. It makes more bottom end. And he lets Hamner, because Hamner's, I believe, his bore and stroke combination is like ours, and they let Hamner's motor run a 7,600 RPM chip, which I think would be fine for our motor.
Right.
But a 72, he runs a hydraulic roller camshaft, which you can't turn it no more than 7,200 because it'll tear itself apart.
Okay. Your motor would be fine with a 7,200 chip.
With a 7,600 chip.
7,600 chip.
Yeah, because I have a smaller stroke. Mine has a 3,500 stroke. His has a 3,750 stroke.
So he's basically got a bigger and faster motor. Anyway, what started all this problem, Steve? About the spec motors and the people up in the Panhandle in Alabama and everywhere saying that
they can't run these motors up there. What started all that?
Well, you know what I believe? This is just my belief. I don't know this for a fact. But they think that somebody's trying to come in their backyard and steal their business, which I do not want to do. You know, we have enough work down here with Florida. I'm involved in other things besides this. And I don't want to go in somebody's backyard and steal their business. I would just like the racers here to be able to travel and race different places. And vice versa, I'd like to see more racers come down here and race, down here also.
Well, like we suggested with, I don't know if we suggested it, but it was brought up talking with Dwayne, that, I asked him about the promoters. You know, the promoters get together and sometimes they're able to get together, and sometimes they're able to hammer out some things that smooth out some of the issues between them. And I asked him if the motor builders did that, and he kind of indicated not. Although
I help everybody engine building, and I want to make a comment to some of them guys that come in, they want to build their own motors, they want to buy the parts.
Right.
Me and my partner Brian, we go to the super late, and he goes to the limited late. Nobody pays us to go to these races. We work on other people's cars that don't even have our motors. We work on other people's cars to keep them into the race. Nobody pays us to do that. Why should I give a list to somebody and let him build the motors, and I'm going to go to the track and tune on his motor? How does that work?
It doesn't sound right to me.
Well, what I should do, live under a bridge?
Gotcha.
You know, some people, they get a mistake of this is their hobby and my business. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, see, the thing that I don't understand, though, is the comment by Wayne last week saying that this was going to be a problem with racers from up north coming down here to compete against the Florida spec motor if the actual McGonigal motor up north is an actually higher horsepower motor.
Well, Wayne made a comment about a spec motor won every night at Speed Weeks, and 80% of the motors down here are spec motors. So, you know, it's like shooting a shotgun at a target. One of the BBs is going to hit.
Exactly.
You know, now, McGonigal up in Nashville, I think the top five were McGonigal motors, which McGonigal probably had 20, 25 cars in a race, and it's the same thing. You know, he's shooting a shotgun at a target. One of the BBs is going to hit.
Yep. Uh-huh. I
think it's just a lot of frustration, and the people who knock it are people who's got enough money to build $35,000-$40,000 motors. Now they don't have that advantage no more. Now the guy that's coming up, you know, buys a motor for $16,000-$17,000, and horsepower wise at the track, which now the really I think the only horsepower track is New Smyrna.
Right.
Lakeland's lost all its grip.
Yeah, I noticed that, you know, in January. It was terrible.
I'll second that because at Lakeland this year, you know, we've always been one that to have a Ford there, and I believe, you know, on race day we were during the practice, you know, we were even looking to kill horsepower. You know, Lakeland, if I can get in the gas two car lengths earlier than the guy with the Ford can, obviously I'm going to have more momentum down the straightaway. So, like he said, the only track with horsepower now is New Smyrna.
What kind of motor was Bush running?
He had 9-1. Hold on, I'm going to tell you right now. Up in Wisconsin, what's his name? Does a lot of truck motors and everything. Wagner. He had a Wagner 9-1.
Okay.
Yeah.
So and basically,
Hoffman,
I mean,
you seen Hoffman in the super late? He was running fifth, right?
Right.
With a crate motor.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. Right.
Broke his super late motor, and he was running fifth in with a crate motor.
That was the same motor that he was running in the ASA, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I told some people that, and they didn't believe me.
Yes, he did.
So what do you think, Steve? I mean, what do you think is going to end this motor war?
What's the answer?
I mean, what's going to be the answer to Panhandle, Lower Alabama, Lower Georgia, and all that? You know, not and farther north.
I don't know. I mean, like Pensacola, you're going to put restrictor plates on. You're going to do everything you can to kill it because you can't use nothing there in Pensacola. They proved that the crate motors are just as fast as the super late motors.
So there's no direct advantage. Basically, is what you're saying.
No, I mean the spec motor, the feedback that I get from drivers, and that's what when we built it, that's what we worked off of. We didn't work off of horsepower because it's got heavy parts in it. All the manufacturers has worked with us, and they brought the price down to us so we can give them these good parts. Because I've explained to them the same thing. Hey, listen, GM, these crate motors and everything, they're not only going to put me out of business, they're going to put you out of business.
Yeah, no doubt.
And for 3 or 4 years, all the parts manufacturers got together for the limited lates, because that's what we started this thing at before, is the limited lates. And they got together and they put up a total of $500 for every race for the highest finishing spec motor in the limited. And that was on for like 3 or 4 years. And I think this year they did away with that program.
Yeah, I remember that. That was a good program, too.
But see, like I'm going to tell you right now, as far as an engine builder, my aspect, I don't like the spec motor because you're looking for power, you're looking for this, you're looking for that's gone. You throw that out the window. Now you're just making sure they're all the same and they're all reliable.
Yeah. Yeah. They're, it's kind of taking the super out of super late model, hasn't it?
Yeah. But as far as, I mean, I think the best fix that we have down here, and it's not, okay, pull the motor out and I'm going to take it to my dyno because nobody's seeing that. All they're saying is they're going by what you say, you know, which you see the controversy everybody's got with their hearsay stuff.
Right.
But at the track, if somebody says, my spec motor don't run as good as his, put both of these cars together. Narone, you hold this race up for an hour, and we're going to swap these motors, and somebody's going to get their butt kicked with their own motor.
Right, yeah. Yeah, like Jeff said earlier.
That will end that. We have done that 2 or 3 times.
Yeah.
People have backed off and didn't want to do it.
Yeah, well, I mean, like Jeff said earlier, you know, he'd be willing to swap any progressive motor with the motor in his car right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, without a problem.
Well, I mean, in speed weeks, Jeff's car was phenomenal. I mean, you could see it through the corner. You could time it through the corner. Nobody was on the gas before he was outside. You know, he didn't pass no cars going down the straightaway. He passed them going around a corner when they was out of the gas.
Yeah, that's called handling.
So
now there's other... There are a couple other people who build the spec motors for fast cars. Is that right?
Yeah, there's Jimmy Cope and Dave Kroom.
And you're doing exactly the same thing.
We all do the same thing. As a matter of fact, we are on the Brodex deal, so at no cost, I don't make no money off of it. I have to keep the 10 sets of heads because I have to buy 10 sets of heads at a time. I have to buy 10 oil pumps at a time. I have to buy 10 intakes at a time. I have to keep all these in stock. When they go to build a motor, I'll send them the heads. It don't cost, I don't make a dime off that. But I do it just to keep the program going.
And this is just, I mean, the bottom line is, to me, it just seems like, I understand all the confusions and arguments going on, but I mean, this is saving the racers a ton of money.
Well, people talk, but they don't know what they're talking about. You know, they hear say, they hear all this stuff, and they hear what's going on, but they don't know what's going on, really. And as far as cheating up the heads, I told Don Nerone when we had a meeting, I said, look, Don, I'll try it. If it don't work, I'll go cut grass or something. I said, but what we need to do is put a fully CNC-ported head so that you can't cheat it up.
Just a wide-open head, basically?
It's Brodex has a 227 fully CNC-ported head, and that's what we put on these things. Now, they got big, heavy parts. They got big, heavy rings, so they'll last where your $40,000 steelhead motor has these little bitty rings that has no drag, but after 1,000 laps, they're done. Bring it in, freshen it up.
Right. Where are these spec motors from?
Our steelhead Chevrolet, I'll tell you right now, on my dyno, which all dynos are different, my steelhead Chevrolet goes 610, 615. My steelhead Ford, 630, 640 range. And you can't drive them. You cannot drive them. They're too violent. And the spec motor, we got a nice, easy ramp, so it don't tear the valve train up because it don't have a real expensive valve train like shaft rockers or anything. It's got regular stud mount rockers. And the reason we don't put a chip on here is because, you know, I'm not the one that tells me what to build. I build the motor to what the promoters tell me to do. Steve, I want a motor that'll compete with a steelhead Ford and a steelhead Chevrolet for half the cost. And that's what I tried to do.
So what do you see this year in, like, the Sunbelt series, and maybe the Goodyear if you want to, you know, you can include that, but the Sunbelt particularly,
mm-hmm.
How do you think that this is going to affect the competition this year? Is the car count going to, is this going to help increase the car count? I mean, what kind of effect do you think it'll have on the Sunbelt over the year?
I don't know. I mean, like they said, the economy, I think, is going to have the most effect.
Yeah. Well, that's what I've been saying, too.
You know, I don't think the spec motor is going to, you know, one way or the other, but it does. You know, like it's like one of my customers, Jeff Schofield's old sponsor there, Mike.
Sure.
Guaranteed Concrete.
Sure.
He called me aside and he said, Steve, what's the difference between my motors and those spec motors? And I said, how many motors you got? He goes, 7. I said, you could have 14.
And that's the difference.
That's the difference.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, Steve, that's a lot of information in a short amount of time. And I mean, I'm sure we're not done with this by any means, but you gave us a lot of information there, brother.
But, I mean, it's definitely a lot of seals. And like I said, if somebody says, you know, one spec motor is not at the track, let's swap them.
Anything you want to add, Jeff?
No, I agree 100% with what he says. And, you know, like he says, if they want to come over there and pull them out, we'll be more than happy to do it for one that's equal to it.
You started all this with your phone call, you know.
That's fine. I just wanted to set it straight. You know, like I said, the interview you guys had the last week,
sure,
was, you know, totally off the chart. You know, you had somebody on there speaking that doesn't even have one and doesn't even know, you know, really what they're talking about on this subject.
Right, and it didn't even start out that way.
Exactly.
Yeah, we started out talking about his dirt late model.
Yeah.
All right, guys. We really
thank you guys for having me on, and
appreciate it.
Y'all for listening to us.
All right, Steve. And Steve, thank you very much for taking the time. I know you're a busy guy, and we really appreciate you taking the time.
Right, I appreciate talking to you guys.
All right.
Thanks a lot, you guys.
Take care.
Thank you.
All right. Wow.
I need a drink.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm starting to get a headache trying to absorb all this.
You're a lot more mechanical. I mean, you've been a mechanic most of your life and work around parts and auto stuff. You know, we talk promotion. I know what's going on. This is really, really. Sometimes it's hard to get your head around, but you know, at least we get the thing out and get people who know together, get them talking about it, and then people can out there, the racers can make up their own mind which way they want to go with stuff.
Well, I mean, Steve gave us the answer that I was asking is the list of parts. He said the list of parts is readily available.
Yeah, and that's
and, you know, I mean, to me.
All right, Rob, there you go. The parts are out there; they're available.
To me, it sounds like it's basically stay out of my yard. That's what it sounds like to me.
Well, I don't know what it sounds like. Boy, I'll tell you what, we had some
and
stuff.
And Dwayne was a wealth of information, too. You know, he's a great engine builder. He's been around for years. I just don't think this is a long way from being over.
Oh, there's no doubt. But I hope the economy doesn't have the effect that I think it is going to during this year. But I really would like to see a clean slate and see what this does. Having all these guys go, I mean, all these guys are going to spec motors.
Yeah,
they have
to. They have
in the Sun Belt. The price has now been dropped. The competitive price.
Almost
of
half price, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we've cut the price of racing for these guys in half, at least on the motor aspect of it. And it should be interesting to see. And you're going to be there Friday night.
Friday night.
Announcing the Sun Belt
Super Late Model Series this Friday night at Orlando Speed World.
Yeah, and we'll be there at Orlando Speed World. Can't wait. And we'll see what kind of show Don Aron puts together.
Yep. First super race of the year.
All right. Well, what do we have? Man, we've just been through it.
We've
tonight.
Been all over the board tonight. We were on the water. With Dennis Gibson.
250 miles an hour.
We're riding motorcycles on the road course with Stevie Letempt. And what was that young lady's name?
Diana Dickerson from the Harley-Davidson dealership up there in Lakeland. And
running around the dirt with Billy Moyer Jr.
Yeah, Billy Moyer Jr., you know, and, man, that we just have a feeling we're going to hear a lot about that.
Yeah, well, you know, and again, the same response. When asked about Christy Hudson of the AMP series, you know, this lady's got it together, so we'll see how that works.
Skip, keep working on that Hooters story, man.
Yeah.
Next time I call you, I want to hear something definitive.
We don't want to hear the carrot dangling in front of us.
Don't blow me off again, dude.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Dwayne McGunahill, with the motors, Steve from Progressive, Jeff Choquette, Rob Bonehead Elting. It's just been a wild night, Jack. Next Tuesday night. The guest on the schedule, it'll be the Lenny and Dave show. Lenny Poliglio and Dave Steele right here on Real Racing USA Live.
And if you hang out after this and you haven't had enough racing, we have last night's Inside Florida Racing show all queued up. And there was a guy named Ivadent Lloyd on that show.
Ivadent Lloyd. I talked to him last Saturday night in a little dirt track down in Lewiston.
Yeah, an interview with him's coming right up after this.
Good night.
You'll be